it's a mind manipulation technique that avoids not only opposition to what is the goal of the manipulators, it actually manipulates people to demand they do what they want to do anyway. You start by secretly creating a problem in the world. You then use the media, which isn't difficult, to wind up public opinion in relation to your manufactured problem to the point where public opinion utters the classic words, "Something must be done! This can't go on! What are they gonna do about it?" And at that point, those who created the problem and got someone else to be blamed for it wound up that public reaction, then openly, in the public arena, in the parliaments of the world, in the newspapers and on the television, offer the solutions to the problems they have created.
Of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together.
Someone is responsible, and it's important for those of us who love liberty and resent Big Brother government, identify the philosophic supporters who have the most to say about the direction our country is going. These are the neoconservatives of recent fame. Granted, they are talented and achieved a political victory that all policymakers must admire. But can freedom and the republic survive this takeover? That question should concern us. Neoconservatives are obviously in positions of influence and are well-placed throughout our government and the media. The neoconservatives, a name they gave themselves, diligently worked their way into positions of power and influence. Above all else, they were not and are not conservatives dedicated to limited constitutional government. More recently, the modern-day neocons have come from the far left, a group historically identified as former Trotskyites. Liberal Christopher Hitchens has just recently joined the neocons, and it has been reported that he has already been to the White House as an ad hoc consultant. Many neocons now in position of influence in Washington can trace their status back to Professor Leo Strauss of the University of Chicago.
Masses, just like witches at black masses.
Do you think the U.S. or U.N. forces should have moved into Baghdad?
No.
Why not?
Because if we'd gone to Baghdad, we would have been all alone. There wouldn't have been anybody else with us. It would have been a U.S. occupation of Iraq. None of the Arab forces that were willing to fight with us in Kuwait were willing to invade Iraq. Once you got to Iraq and took it over and took down Saddam Hussein's government, then what are you going to put in its place? That's a very volatile part of the world, and if you take down the central government in Iraq, you can easily end up seeing pieces of Iraq fly off. Part of it the Syrians would like to have to the west. Part of eastern Iraq the Iranians would like to claim, fought over for 8 years. In the north, you've got the Kurds, and if the Kurds spin loose and join with the Kurds in Turkey, then you threaten the territorial integrity of Turkey. It's a quagmire.
Regime change in Iraq would bring about a number of benefits to the region.
We will, in fact, be greeted as liberators.
I think they're in the last throes, if you will, of the insurgency. Now, Rand Paul, pointing to things like that, wrote in the Wall Street Journal also, many of those clamoring for military action now are the same people who made every false assumption imaginable about the cost, challenge, and purpose of the Iraq war. They have been wrong for so long. Why should we listen to them again? Your response?
With all due respect, John, I was a strong supporter then of going into Iraq. I'm a strong supporter now. Everybody knows what my position is. There's nothing to be argued about there. But if we spend our time debating what happened 11 or 12 years ago, we're going to miss the threat that is growing and that we do face. Rand Paul, with all due respect, is basically an isolationist. He doesn't believe we ought to be involved in that part of the world.
Staff called me into his office and said, I want you to know, he said, sir, we're going to attack Iraq. And I said, why? He said, we don't know. He said, I said, well, did they tie Saddam to 9/11? He said, no. He said, but I guess they don't know what to do about terrorism. And so but they can attack states and they want to look strong. And so I guess they think if they take down a state, it will intimidate the terrorists. And you know, it's like that old saying, he said, if the only tool you have is a hammer, then every problem has to be a nail. Well, I walked out of there pretty upset. And then we attacked Afghanistan. I was pretty happy about that. We should have. And then I came back to the Pentagon about 6 weeks later. I saw the same officer. I said, why haven't we attacked Iraq? We still going to attack Iraq? He said, oh, sir. He says, it's worse than that. He said, he pulled up a piece of paper off his desk. He said, I just got this memo from the Secretary of Defense's office that says we're going to attack and destroy the governments in seven countries in 5 years. We're going to start with Iraq, and then we're going to move to Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Iran. I said, seven countries in 5 years. I said, is that a classified memo? He said, yes, sir. I said, well, don't show it to me. He was about to show it to me. He said, because I want to talk about it. And I sat on this information for a long time, for about 6 or 8 months. I was so stunned by this, I couldn't begin to talk about it. And I couldn't believe it.
As the 21st century began, human evolution was at a turning point. Natural selection, the process by which the strongest, the smartest, the fastest reproduced in greater numbers than the rest, a process which had once favored the noblest traits of man, now began to favor different traits. Most science fiction of the day predicted a future that was more civilized and more intelligent. But as time went on, things seemed to be heading in the opposite direction, a dumbing down. How did this happen? Evolution does not necessarily reward intelligence. With no natural predators to thin the herd, it began to simply reward those who reproduced the most and left the intelligent to become an endangered species.
No confession, all is known, all is known. New world order, you shall be shown, shall be shown. No confession, all is known, all is known. New world order.
Our topic tonight is a more sober one, of concern to publishers as well as editors. I want to talk about our common responsibilities in the face of a common danger. The events of recent weeks may have helped to illuminate that challenge for some, but the dimensions of its threat have loomed large on the horizon for many years. Whatever our hopes may be for the future, for reducing this threat or living with it, there is no escaping either the gravity or the totality of its challenge to our survival and to our security. A challenge that confronts us in unaccustomed ways in every sphere of human activity. This deadly challenge imposes upon our society two requirements of direct concern, both to the press and to the president. Two requirements that may seem almost contradictory in tone, but which must be reconciled and fulfilled if we are to meet this national peril. I refer first to the need for far greater public information, and second, to the need for far greater official secrecy. The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it's in my control.
Those of you who have put your full faith in the fiat currency system have a rude awakening coming. One day you will wake up, markets will be in turmoil. Headlines will read, dollar run, dollar collapse, the end of the dollar. You see, like all fiat currencies, inevitably the dollar will return to its inherent value of zero. Government education has conditioned the population to believe that inflation is a phenomenon, a normal consequence of living in a modern economy. However, this is not true. Inflation, by definition, is an increase in the currency supply. This increase is a direct result of central banks. Central banks act as a cartel for the big banks. Much like OPEC represents oil-producing nations, the Federal Reserve represents large banks like J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, and HSBC. This banking cartel, partnered with the U.S. government, has created an unsustainable situation where trillions are created to bail out banks. Interest rates are suppressed, causing massive imbalances in our economy, and price inflation is underreported. The end is near. This system of fraud is on the verge of imploding.
It's a serious consequence
those that have their faith
of our
in it.
Lack of respect and our loss of liberty and lack of concern and defense of our republic. And we're suffering the consequences. This is what we're talking about. How can we reverse this trend? I think we have to understand how it happened, what the problems were, and what we have to aim for. But we've had a lot of problems because of this. Number one, economic problems, because they do not understand the Constitution and economics on monetaries. I mean, it is very clear what we should be doing. The founders knew and understood something about inflation. The runaway inflation of the continental dollar was devastating to the economy, so they were explicit. They said no emitting of bills of credit, no printing money, no paper money, and that only gold and silver.
Urge this body to trust the Republicans. Let me be clear, I don't trust the Republicans. And I don't trust the Democrats. And I think a whole lot of Americans likewise don't trust the Republicans and the Democrats, because it is leadership in both parties that has gotten us in this mess.
Imagine a time when the White House is once again occupied by a friend of liberty. You may think I'm talking about electing Republicans. I'm not. I'm talking about electing lovers of liberty. It isn't good enough to pick the lesser of two evils. We must elect men and women of principle and conviction and action who will lead us back to greatness. There is a great and tumultuous battle underway for the future, not of the Republican Party, but the future of the entire country. As our voices rise in protest, the NSA monitors your every phone call. If you have a cell phone, you are under surveillance. I believe what you do on your cell phone is none of their damn business.
Thunder? America is under assault by enemies foreign and domestic. Political correctness has silenced thought, and most Americans are programmed by the corporatist media into a false left-right paradigm. The truth is, there is an entrenched duopoly that controls the electoral process, so that whether you choose a jackass or an elephant, you get the same old, the new tyrant's face to front for the unelected and connected transnationalists. Congress is nothing but a rubber stamp for K Street-drafted autocracy under color of law on behalf of those who control the money supply and the foreign policy, irrespective of which party is in power. America is a police state at home and an empire abroad, yet most Americans still think they're free because the money's flowing. Hedonism and entertaining distractions abound, and we live in fear of the most recent monsters, both real and fabricated. Is this the vision of the Founding Fathers? Is this truly the liberty for which the brave have bled down through the ages? No. This is nothing but a facsimile of freedom with a deceitful veneer of moral courage. So long as the secret owners of the Federal Reserve control the money, credit, and economy of these United States, our military might will be used to secure their fortunes across the globe, shed the blood of innocents, and tarnish the red stripes of those who fought for liberty and the white stars that shine on the field of blue, unwavering champions of the good, the true, and the beautiful. Mistakes happen. Mistakes are often useful lessons from which to learn, make amendments, and progress to ever higher achievement. But sometimes the mistakes are fatal, and correction is extremely elusive, if it is possible at all. As Americans, we've made numerous fatal mistakes. But the damage from the wounds hasn't killed this grand experiment in liberty. Yet. We are far too close for comfort, and if a drastic course correction is not undertaken soon, we shall be no more. The longer we wait to revitalize and actuate our principles of liberty and virtue, the more extreme the required correction will need to be, and the unavoidable harm more severe. As we appear to be divided between a false right and a false left, we are in fact divided between those who believe in limited government and a virtuous society, and those who practice hedonism and prefer anarchy or tyranny. Ordered liberty needs government as part of our society to facilitate the protection of our rights, limited in scope and subordinate to the people. A virtuous people who exercise self-restraint, self-discipline, self-mastery, and accept and execute the duty to be free. Liberty is not license, and rights cannot be exercised without commensurate responsibilities. Liberty is practically gone because those of us on the, quote, right, fight amongst ourselves over quibbling garbage instead of uniting on the broad principles upon which we largely agree: restoring sound money, free markets, religious and civil liberties, and a sensible foreign policy of non-interventionism, leading by example and prepared to defeat all enemies at any time. If America falls, don't blame someone else. It is our fault. It's my fault. It's your fault for allowing it. Our fatal mistakes are our own. We have allowed the uber-national corporatists to use media to fearfully manipulate us, plunder us with their financial malfeasance, and instill fear with their festering militarism abroad and militarized police at home. The chief control tool is democratism, which does not further liberty. It merely appeases the fickle mobs by satisfying disordered passions while binding them with invisible chains of their own choosing. If you want America to be the land of the free and the home of the brave, you actually have to be brave and desire to be free. Our fatal mistakes can be corrected, and the cost will be great. But the cost of infighting amongst those of us who love the old republic and the Constitution is far, far greater. And history will recall that we are the people who witnessed the end of America when men were once free. Some will wait to see what happens. Others will be wondering what happened. If you're listening to Liberty's Thunder, you're one of the few who is willing to take action and influence what is about to happen. America is on the verge of fading away, not with a bang, but with a whimper. Sure, it'll look normal. The stars and stripes will fly, barbecues and ball games and apple pie. But when the prepared chaos is unleashed, the mob will clamor for a savior to restore order and trade precious liberty for false security. This is not that which we inherited. It is that which our forebears fought against. Your valor will not be rewarded if you stand alone. We need to grow our ranks, get more Americans involved, informed, and active, realize that the situation is dire, and know that only the bold will see liberty or death. Either work hard right now to restore constitutional governance for a free and virtuous nation by taking the right wing of the Welfare Warfare Party of the District of Corruption and restoring sound money, free markets, religious and civil liberties, and a sensible foreign policy of non-interventionism backed by the biggest, baddest military on the planet, or watch the statists in both parties push their corporatist agenda to their benefit and our demise. Now is the last chance to stop those who perpetuate an empire abroad and a police state at home, to defeat the lawless hordes of cultural Marxists, statists, collectivists, oligarchs, plutocrats, useful idiots, and their fellow travelers, especially the Democrat socialists. First, you must crush the rhinos for liberty. You are live on Liberty's Thunder with Rex and Trog. Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex Gloom, broadcasting to you from the District of Blunders, the Imperial City. Captain Cave Doom.
Captain Cave Doom!
And I am Trog Luddite, your co-host. And I did make a video once. You go to YouTube and you can type in Troglodyte and see my video. That's my home in the cave. Anyway, that's a deep subject. This is deep times. I was just on a conversation on one of the foreign groups I'm on, and I got into a little bit of a tiff with some people because there was an article posted that was a very eloquent piece of work, and it was a letter to Americans from, somebody trying to explain what's really going on in the Ukraine. And one of the comments under the article was Americans can't read. Well, I got a little hot. And the reason is I understand why people say that, because you and I beat up on Americans all day long, you know, because I am one. But
yeah, there are Americans to beat up on.
Right, but I realize, well, actually, there's Americans on this site, too. In fact, there was a friend of Kelly's on there, and so I friended them. But, you find connections all over the world, and you know, it's a small world, and it's amazing, you know, that 4 or 5 points, and everybody knows somebody, right? And or 6 points, whatever the heck that was. But it was a kind of an interesting thing. It kind of occupied my mind right up until the show started, so I forgot everything that I was going to open with, which is fine, because sometimes, you know, these events in life, you know, give us lessons that need to be told. And I realized that the person who wrote it was being like we in America are against the Russians or against the Iranians or against, you know, the Palestinians or against whoever. You know, it's the oligarchs, the creeps that have control of everything, including the media and the education systems, you know, they train you to hate other people and to criticize and to be prejudice against other people. You know, you could do it against the French. You know what I mean? You can make fun of the Belgians. You know, Austin Powers did all the time. But you know what I'm saying? It's that whole concept of, you know, we need real conversations. And it isn't conversations in this country about, because what you and I try to do, and it's really a big passion for me, is to try to open people's eyes to the rest of the world and look back at the United States after having been the superpower and the reserve currency for, you know, 70 plus years since World War II with the Bretton Woods system, and what America has unleashed on the world in the last, you know, 15, 20 years, and how the world is reacting to that. And, you know, that's, you know, goes into the whole BRICS conversation and everything else. But, you know, this constant demonization of Russia and Putin based on lies. And it's just mind-boggling how quickly we can pull ourselves into a fight that we don't even understand against the people we don't even know. Yeah, in fact, we might know Russians in our neighborhood, and yet we can just walk right into that insanity and that hatred and that prejudice because you watch mainstream media and you listen to the talking heads that run our government, who everybody hates anyway. That's what just blows me away. You know, what do we got, a 12% approval rating of Congress in America right now? And then McCain will run around on Sunday talk shows and stir up the world against Putin, and then Hillary will come out, you know, who is the neocon's neocon, you know, and call Putin Hitler, and then next thing you know, you go to groups, you know, on social media, and you see people going, yeah, war, we got to go to war against Russia, and Putin's the devil, and you're like, how in the hell that happened? Because if you have a brain, and you can actually do some research on your own, and you shut off the cable news, And that's true for, you know, Western Europe, too. It's all owned by the same people. It's all the same propaganda. You know, these people have an agenda. And that agenda is to keep people divided because they're easier to rule when people are angry, when they're looking for a scapegoat, when they're looking for somebody to blame, or they're afraid, which is in the title of tonight's show. So maybe I can get back on track here now that I got that piece off my chest, you know. But it's important to understand that, and it just blows me away. You and I had a conversation yesterday in the morning on a chat, and then we had a conversation last night with several people on a chat, and it really stemmed around something that's my pet peeve as a freedom-loving American who believes in my country, who believes in what our founding fathers put together, who believes in the Bill of Rights and individual responsibility and free enterprise and, you know, apple pie and baseball I could give a crap about because I'm not a baseball fan. But you know what I'm saying? That whole American spirit that used to be the light of the world, you know, that people looked up to, that was about spreading good around the world. You know, we're the most giving people in the world. You know, in terms of economics, in terms of outreach ministries, in terms of third world nations as a people. But our government sucks. And I really, you know, in this little conversation I had before the show, really wanted people to understand that, you know, I'm not my government. I didn't vote for these bastards. I have fought for years to get people to learn how to go to the internet and actually look at somebody's voting record and go, oh, he doesn't represent, or he or she doesn't represent my beliefs. That person's a liar. Who else is running against them? I've always been that way. I've never been a party person. You know, we had that conversation yesterday morning, you know, about winning back the Senate. And I'm thinking, with who? Voting in the same bastards that got our country to where it is right now? You think that's a win? And then one of the comments was, well, yeah, but at least the bills will get, you know, introduced if the Republicans have the Senate. And I'm thinking, so? You still got Obama as the president. You know, he runs the country by a pen and a phone anyway. He'll just veto everything. And then you have the same bastards in there that got us into the Bush-era wars and raised our debt ceiling to a record level in the history of our country. And they've been in there 30, 40, 50, 60 years. These people are in their 70s. They're crazy, warmongering. They don't give a shit about you. you know, as an individual or the Constitution. Look at their damn voting record. You know, when you got a Republican that's been in there 40 years and has a 40% constitutional rating on his record, you might as well vote for a damn Democrat. You know, and that's what you and I, and I'm sure if Randy's listening, he would love this conversation right now, because it's so important to understand that if you keep doing the same damn things, nothing will change. And if anything, 2014 proved that nothing changed. You know, you would think that 2012, and you and I met in the 2012 primary kind of right before the convention, but I was very involved in the primary. You were involved in the primary. You know, we kind of crashed into each other by accident. And you'd think that people would learn after what the Republicans did and the RNC did to shove Romney down our throat. I mean, Romney self-admitted they had to steal the damn primary. I mean, how in the hell can you get up and go and just pick a Republican and back the GOP after they admitted they screwed you? And that isn't the word that I'm thinking, but because I'm not Rex, I won't say it. But, you know, and then you turn around and tell me that, well, you know, we got to just win the Senate. And I'm thinking, if you lose your damn soul, you haven't won anything. You've just put off death a little bit longer. Do you get that? Do people truly understand that? Or is fear running your life? Which goes to the conversation we had last night, the chat. You know, when I talk, the most frustrating thing to me is to see the Republicans play the Obama this, the Obama that fear game, and then people run around and post the damn news of the day, and it genders all this fear and animosity, and then they can just slide their favorite frickin' rhino, who could frickin' be a Democrat, in there and says, well, you need to vote for us, because if you're scared, we don't want to rock the boat. We don't want to risk losing this seat. I've been winning it for 80 frickin' years, and if we get this new guy who's an untried guy, you know, he may lose to the Democrat, and then we won't get the Senate, and then we won't be able to give Obama more of what he wants. I mean, it's just, it's insanity, and it's driven by fear. And if you're a Christian, and you think like that, and you pass those articles on, and you are part of that fear-driven insanity, especially if you were involved in 2012, you're part of the problem. You're supposed to live your life by faith. Our founding fathers, and if you, for you Americans who still can read, like my foreign friends were getting a little tip with, you know, but the you handful of Americans who still can read, read the Bill of Rights, read the original intent, read our founding fathers' ideas, what was in their heart and mind when they launched this incredible republic. It's not a freaking democracy. God,
it's,
you know,
demonocracy.
I don't think I've heard republic unless you're on the Ron Paul side of things, you know, who actually understand what our founding fathers put together for us. This incredible legacy after 10,000 years of history and wars and oppression and kings and queens and blue bloods, and never being able to rise above the standard of life you were born into, you know, unless you were connected to somebody of royalty. And to think of what they put at our fingertips and how Americans have allowed that to slip out of our fingers. And one of my favorite quotes, you know, when Benjamin Franklin walked out of the Liberty Hall and a woman walked up to him and said, "Sir, what kind of government did you give us?" And he said, "Ma'am, we gave you a republic if you can keep it." And those are some of the most profound words ever spoken by anybody who had the vision to put this country together. We were the light of the world. We did great things. We were a great country. We were a great industrial country. We created the concept of the middle class. We created prosperity in the largest batch of people in the world, and then we spread that wealth around the world. Then we sat back on our asses, and we got fat and lazy and complacent, and we filled our lives with sports and games and barbecues and frickin' reality TV and MTV and And we forgot that freedom requires sacrifice and work, that a republic requires a citizenry that can read and understands how government works and is involved. Because while the good people, because I've heard this freaking excuse from conservatives and Christians and the rest of, you know, people that would be on our side, so to speak. Okay, you know, well, we were busy working and raising our family and doing what we're supposed to be doing as Americans. And the liberals, you know, they all got into government positions and in politics, and they took over the country while we were working hard. Well, that's a freaking great excuse for about a year. And then you get up and go, wait, they're winning. We're losing. Why are they winning? Because I'm so busy living my life chasing the American dream that I forgot to be a citizen of this great country. And they took over. And they've been taken over gradually for a long time. And you could argue the start date, all, you know, you can go back 100 years or whatever. But definitely since the 60s. You know? And we let it go. They didn't steal anything, you know, and I don't want to get scriptural, too scriptural, but Satan only has power if you empower him. Otherwise, he's just a bully. You know, I don't understand why, you know, it's like you got the same book. Yeah, read, understand the difference between fear and faith. And you don't even have to look at it from a scriptural level. Just look at it from a human content. If you go in, let's take a sports analogy. You go in, right, to a game, and you're, let's say you're a football player, whatever, you know, and you go, or for me in martial arts, you go in there and you fear as you walk onto the stage and face your opponent, and you have fear that you may not win. You lost before the first punch was ever thrown. And it just disgusts me to see people who claim they're conservatives and Christians live their daily lives in fear of something most of us knew was coming years ago because we saw our country crumbling a long time ago. I mean, it's like wake up, you know, or as Trog says, wake the hell up. Quit being a victim. Take back your role and responsibility. Freedom is not a right. It's a responsibility. And you have got to figure this out, because if you don't figure it out, then the idea of America is almost over, because there's people who hate our country and what we stand for, and guess what? They're right here in the country running a big chunk of it. And there's good people in Congress and good people in your state-level legislations in your cities that need your help. It isn't just a matter of battling the bad guys. It's a matter of supporting the good guys. You know, you got to do a little of both. And none of this takes that much time. It really doesn't take that much time. Once you're educated and you're on track and you know your resources and your sources and you figure out what you believe and stand for and you know who you want to support, you just support them. You just add it to your life and say, you know what, instead of bitching while the left destroys my freaking country and turns us into a subservient state of some, you know, utopian EU communist type environment, you know, and bitching about it, posting the freaking news of the day on Facebook, get involved and do something. I mean, I don't know what else to do, Rex. You know, I'm thinking like, you know, I built that war thread, right? And I'm like going, and people are going to think I'm crazy or I'm some kind of conspiracy theorist guy. You know, I'm going, our country's trying to take us to frickin' war with Russia and probably China because they're losing their reserve currency status to the BRICS system. And these people, these idiots, are the same idiots and psychopaths that were in the Kennedy administration when Russia was moving missiles into Cuba that wanted to first strike Russia. And thank God we had a man with some sanity, otherwise these neocons would have blown up the freaking world back then. It's the same people. They're nuts. They're insane. They're embedded in our country and our power systems and our war industry. And they have a lot of our congressional people by the short hairs. You know, thank God not everyone is, but there's a lot of power. And they're trying to get us in a freaking World War IV. And people want to post about crap that means nothing. And I'm like going, and I can't get people to engage on a thread. We're facing an imminent threat to ourselves based on our politicians, based on lies, and I can't get people to have a conversation about it. And I mean, there's days I'm just like going, well, what the hell? What the hell am I doing this for? You know, get involved. When I built that group, I never built a group so people could post Obama this, Obama that all day long and stupid pictures that mean nothing, but to actually have a conversation so we could educate each other so that we could become effective in the fight to save our country. And saving your country is not crying about Obama for 5.5 years. He's a freaking president. Get over it. My question always is, and every time somebody posts some stupid, fear-driven article that's designed so you'll vote for the next rhino or keep them in power, is what are the Republicans doing to stop him? You got 5.5 years. What have they done? How about nothing? How about surrender? How about compromise, which is a softer word for surrender, for 5.5 years? The greatest political power in the history of the world, and we got a guy that cries as a Speaker of the House. Unfreaking believable. That's my opening. Back to you.
Oh, yeah. Trog is on fire. When Trog says the group, he means Liberty's Talk on Facebook. So if you want to follow the conversation and look at the articles and the research, go to Liberty's Talk on Facebook. And while you're on Facebook, stop by Liberty's Thunder, that's our show page, like the page, and then right-click on the like button and say get notifications. We do not send out 1,000 messages a day. It's once or twice a week, but you'll always get a notification of when we are broadcasting if you make sure that you click like get notifications on Liberty's Thunder on Facebook. Normally we broadcast 9 p.m. Eastern on Sunday evenings. Sometimes if things get a little heated, we might do more than that, but generally 9 p.m. Eastern on Sundays, and we appreciate everybody who has helped get the word out about the show. You know, Chris and I do this because it's important, because we believe that we need to get more people involved and active to save this republic from its seemingly inevitable demise, but we don't get paid to do this. In fact, it costs us money, and nobody at all knows that this show exists unless you tell them, unless you share it on Facebook, unless you post it in Facebook groups, unless you tweet it out, unless you post it all over the Internet, unless you, you know, give someone a personal invitation, no one knows it exists. So we appreciate everybody who has helped us get the word out there. This is important stuff, and you're not hearing too much of this around. The fact is that we have a controlled media, and that includes the alternate media, and there are some good people out there doing some good work. You know, Jeff Green over at Alternative Media Television, Ben Swan, Josh Tully, there's people doing good work. And then you can pull from other sources, foreign sources, Press TV, RT, you know, Max Kaiser does stuff. Peter Schiff was doing some good stuff. He's had to pare back. So the information is out there. It's just hard to get in one place, and most people still flick on the MSLSD, the Communist News Network, and the Fox Noise. And so they get controlled information. They get limited data. You know, can people read? Well, you know, I think the bulk of Americans can still read. Unfortunately, because of Twitter and social media and a overpriced and intentionally dumbed down education system, I'm not sure that most Americans read above the 7th or 8th grade level. If you are not informed, if you are not educated, if you do not know more and can think critically than anybody else on the planet, you will lose your country, because they will outcompete you and eventually they will destroy you. So, you know, help people get informed and get educated and wake up. The important thing is that this stuff is really not that complicated. They manage to give you the sound bites and confuse you. Well, it doesn't take that much to get unconfused if you're genuinely looking for the truth, as opposed to trying to stick yourself in the little box that you've identified yourself with, whether it's ANCAP, libertarian, conservative, Republican, Tea Party. I don't care how you label yourself, whatever it is, that's like the, you know, that's your thing. Well, guess what? Frank Luntz has tested that, and they know that. So they send messages out with your buzzwords to get you to do what they want you to do. It's just like in the opening clip, the Hegelian dialectic, right? It's a thesis. They put together a proposal, right, whatever it might be, whatever the agenda is. And then there's the antithesis, which is, you know, that the first one could be the problem, the second one could be the reaction. You're going to react to it, and you're going to think that the opposite side is the problem, and that elicits a reaction. You turn to them, they provide you with the solution, and the solution is, usually, you know, the synthesis. It is precisely the outcome that they wanted in the first place, and the only reason they played the dance was to get you to think that it was the outcome that you wanted. And that's how they get you to get all hopped up and excited about the Democrats are socialists, we are conservatives, we got to take the Republicans have to take the House. If I hear one more comment about the Republicans taking the Senate this November, I'm going to just shoot somebody. It's literal insanity. I meant that figuratively, by the way. Look, the Republicans are notorious for, you know, snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. They can flub this up, but if they manage to just kind of coast on the incompetency of the community organizer that you elected into the White House twice and the chaos going around the planet, they will gain the Senate. What are you getting excited about? So you trade the desert rat Harry Reid for the mountain turtle Mitch McConnell. Oh, but he's a Republican. He'll bring those bills that Boehner sends to the floor. So what? First of all, he's only going to bring the bills Boehner sends him that didn't come from the conservative caucus minority in the House, just the regular ones that K Street douchebags wrote for them that sound conservative but really aren't. And whatever doesn't fit in with Obama's agenda is going to get vetoed. And guess what? Even if you manage to get the House in Republican control this November, you're not going to get a veto-proof majority. So it's kind of pointless. In fact, I would argue that you make Mitch McConnell the Senate Majority Leader, you're helping the Republicans look like assholes, and you're helping the establishment against actual conservatives, and you're not doing anything to stop Obama. They'll just bluster more, but they won't do anything. McConnell, well, we have a math problem. We control the House, and we just took the Senate, which means America is moving in the right direction, but we don't have enough numbers to override the veto, so really the only way anything good is going to happen, we're going to repeal Obamacare, even though we voted 40 times against it to do that when it didn't count. We're going to balance the budget. We're going to not raise the debt ceiling. We're going to fix the borders. We're going to do all the things that conservatives want, but only if you give us the White House in 2016. And when I say give us the White House, I mean, you know, you need a sensible person, an electable candidate, you know, like a Jeb Bush or this dipshit that Chris mentioned earlier.
You know, in some ways we kind of had to steal the Republican nomination because our party is Southern, evangelical, and populist. And you're Northern, and you're Mormon, and you're rich. And you do not match well,
really,
with our party.
That's real funny. Ha, ha, ha. You know, people like Mitt Romney, who don't have a sense of humor, I don't know if you've seen that documentary, Mitt. You know, they're trying to humanize him. Why would they try to humanize him after he lost the election? Could it be because they want to run him again? People like Mitt Romney don't have a sense of humor. They pretend because, you know, they've got to look hokey. I mean, the guy doesn't even know, he didn't even know what a donut was. He's never had a donut. He's never seen a donut. That's like, most of these guys live in ivory towers, isolated from anybody else. They fly, you know, over your houses, over your neighborhoods, and they think that the world consists of, you know, Davos, Beverly Hills, Washington, D.C., Miami, Chicago, and wherever the hell they might have a house in Jackson Hole or whatever. That's the world to them. They have no idea what Main Street looks like. They don't go to Walmart or Target. They wouldn't behoove themselves to go sit in a drive-in or a movie theater with you people. So they have no concept. They don't have a sense of humor. You know, they will laugh at you, but in a sinister way. So when they make a joke about something like that, it's supposed to look self-deprecating or make a humorous comment, but usually there's truth in whatever they're presenting. He's pretending like that was a joke, but the fact is that they did steal the nomination. Now, I'm not saying that Romney wouldn't have gotten enough delegates, but they wouldn't even quarter that. They didn't want it to appear as if there was a challenge. Just they learned that lesson at the 76th convention when Ronald Wilson Reagan almost got the nomination over Gerald Ford, and you know how that went. So, you know, they are sycophants. They're psychotics and they're sycophants. They are not like you. They're not normal and they want to control. And one of the control mechanisms they're using right now, and Chris brought it up, and I think it's very important, is he mentioned hate, you know, dividing us along, you know, race, tribe, creed, ideology, whatever they can fabricate to get you divided, that's what they want. Well, if you've read Orwell's novel, and let me specify, it's a sci-fi dystopian novel. Some people have read 1984, and they thought it was an operations manual. So there was something in there called 2 Minutes of Hate. You can look this up on the Internet. There was this movie done, I think, in the 80s that you can probably even see the 2 Minutes of Hate. But this is from his book. The horrible thing about the 2 Minutes hate was not that one was obliged to act a part, but it was that it was impossible to avoid joining in. Within 30 seconds, any preference was always unnecessary. A pretense was always unnecessary. A hideous ecstasy of fear and vindictiveness, a desire to kill, to torture, to smash faces in with a sledgehammer, seemed to follow through the whole group of people like an electric current, turning one even against one's will into a grimacing, screaming lunatic. And yet the rage that one felt was an abstract, undirected emotion, which could be switched from one object to another, like the flame of a blow lamp. That's 2 minutes hate. You don't think that you have that? Oh, well, you know, no, they're showing emotional stuff. We don't hate. We love. Well, they teach you to hate. Right now they're teaching you to hate Vladimir Putin because he's the bad guy from Russia. You're even hearing comments from the right-wing talking bubbleheads, right, that anybody who points out the lucidity of Russian policy vis-a-vis the fact that Vladimir Putin is the leader of Russia. His interests are for Russia and the Russian people. If you point out that there's a lucid, cogent plan, a rational self-interest for Russia in what he's doing, you've now become a Russian apologist. So you see, if you look at someone else's rational actions and say, well, I would really not like to be invaded by Russia. I would really not like to go to war with Russia. I would really prefer that we could outcompete Russia. But, you know, I understand what the Russians are doing. Suddenly you're a pro-Russian sympathizer, which makes you anti-American. And if you point out you're criticized what we're doing in our country, you're now on the opposite side. You have to be hated. That's how they do it. And it doesn't have to be, right? It could be, you know, jihadi terrorists. It could be, you know, Israel. It could be Hamas. Whatever. They use whatever is going to emotionally get you all ginned up. And it is designed, remember something, whatever's happening overseas is not about what's happening overseas. It's about how they manage you over here. Your fear of the ascending Russian bear is designed to get you to give up more of your rational thought, more of your critical thinking, more of your actual patriotism, and more of your liberty for some false sense of security and hive mind. And if you don't think that this is real, just look at the way people react at concerts or sports games. I don't care what the game is. The most popular one for eliciting this kind of psychotic mindset has been football. Not American football, I'm talking, which does that too, but mostly the soccer type. And it's coming here, that mentality of diseased, rabid fandom. Get the other guy. And there's nothing wrong with cheering your team and being competitive. That's great. But there is a psychosis involved in it, and it is a facsimile and a proxy to get you to apply that same kind of mentality to the political sphere as they play their WWE mind games with you. In the back, they're having cigars and drinking brandy together and laughing at you. But out front, they're competing with each other. There's the good guys and the bad guys. Which guys are the good guys? Which guys are the bad guys? Depends on your sympathies. If you're on the left, the bad guys are the right. And if you're on the right, the bad guys are the left. Notice how Hitler, Bush, and Monkey Bush and the neocons dragged us into these wars, and there was protests, and the anti-war left was out there and all that good stuff. And then when their guy does it, silence. We used to get a daily death count, death toll from Iraq. You think Iraq is any better off now than it was in 2003 before the neocons got Bush to invade Iraq, a country that had nothing to do with 9/11. And besides the point, I mean, whether we should or shouldn't have invaded Iraq, who knows back then, the execution of the post-toppling was horrendous, but that was by design. It was designed to bring you what you got today. Now, if you happened to be for it back then and you were duped, that's okay. It happens. Learn from your mistakes. The fatal mistake is to defend your past decisions that were in error, to defend your team simply because they were your colors, to defend somebody simply because you had a good feeling about him and he seemed to be a good guy and he spoke in a kind of a hokey way, made us feel good about being Americans, and he had a good strategy for taking out the evildoers. Well, forget it. You fucked up. Get over it. Retool. Learn. Look at it objectively. And move forward on what is in our rational best interest as Americans. Fighting Vladimir Putin is not in our interests. Putting sanctions on Russia is not in our interest. Putting sanctions on Russia hasn't punished Russia one iota. Their market blipped for a day and then it started to recover. We cut off their food. You know, we won't trade grain and meat and all that kind of stuff. They're replacing it from all over the world, from Brazil, from Uruguay, from other sources. All right? The other countries that have been doing business there are hurt more by the sanctions. We're hurt more by the sanctions. Our market has been gone down. Our companies aren't able to do business. These sanctions were about crippling the United States. The enemy is behind our lines. It's not Vladimir Putin. Does that mean he's our friend? No, it doesn't mean he's our friend. But he's not our enemy. He will be. We're going to make him our enemy. We're going to pretend he's our enemy now and antagonize until eventually he doesn't have a choice, but he has to be our enemy. Keep in mind something. You go poking around the Russian bear, not only do they have nukes and a very powerful conventional force, probably not as strong as ours yet, but they're getting there, right, and resources, but they have alliances with people that could cripple us tomorrow morning, like the Chinese. This is a very dangerous game. Don't get hopped up and think that we're the America that saved the world in World War II. We are no longer that nation. Not only are we far differently in our morality today than we were in 1941, we are far weaker as a people. You look around, the average adult adolescent male in America today is nothing compared to a teenaged male in 1941. So we're morally weaker. We have $17 trillion in public debt, $200-plus trillion in unfunded liabilities. We are economically floating on credit that could collapse in a second. The Treasury is actually asking for more money to float in an emergency that goes beyond 2 days. Give me a break. It's at a breaking point. A little snowflake could set the whole avalanche going. And as far as our military capacity, we're sending our troops all over the universe to do things on behalf of corporate and banking interests, not American interests, demoralizing them, considering them terrorists when they get back, purging patriots and Christians from our military ranks, giving them cocaine and other drugs to handle their PTSD, killing them by making them wait before they can get into a VA to see a doctor. And you think that you can mobilize against an enemy like Russia or China? That is beyond a fatal mistake. That is an invitation for the end of your life as you know it. You will be a subject of either the oligarchs that take over the rubble here or the foreign troops that come in because you can't handle your own country. That's where this is going. And instead of getting excited about this antagonism with Russia or thinking that, well, I'm not really sure that this is a good idea, but I don't want to look like I don't want to appear like I like Vladimir Putin. People won't respect me. You don't have to like Vladimir Putin. You don't have to be his friend. But he's not that difficult to understand. Am I right, Chris? I mean, the Russians are not hard to understand. The Chinese are not hard to understand. We know that they're acting within their own interests.
Yes, that's right.
Could anybody logically say that our government, and it's not just Obama, it's all of them, Congress and Obama and the courts, can you rationally say that they're acting within the interests of the American people?
12%, baby. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
I don't know. I was asking you a question, throwing it to
You said Chris earlier. So, yeah, you know, now that I'm expelled the bad air, I feel better. And you're very calm and collecting to calm me down a little bit. You know, if you look at all the things that you discussed, which I didn't take notes on, so I won't remember it all, but I do understand the theory of it. And when you talk about, you know, and I like to talk about Russia, and the reason is because nobody else will. And I like to talk about Ukraine because nobody else will. You know, I was talking about Syria. I mean, I must have posted, I don't know, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 posts, comments, articles, videos. You know, I went out and searched that stuff and posted, and maybe two or three people would even comment or hit a like or whatever, and I'm going, this is important, and you aren't paying attention to it because you're too busy posting the news of the day to understand that Syria is a very important geopolitical chess piece in the game between the U.S., Russia, and China, and the oil and the gas and the petrodollar and our fake reserve currency that's crumbling around the world and being exited as fast as people can get off of it. And yet you can't get people focused until it gets in the media. Then it comes on Fox News, and then there's a little bit of blip and blap, and Obama's thinking about, you know, the gas bull crap and that false flag, and Obama's talking about, you know, intervention, and then it's in the news, and then you could get people to talk about it. And then as soon as it went out of the news, after Putin saved the world from World War III on that one, it goes away, and then you couldn't get anybody to talk about it. And it's the same thing with the Ukraine. When, as soon as I saw the Ukraine situation, because when I started researching Syria, and actually, this conversation we're having right now goes back to me asking a simple question way back when, was like, and you remember that, why did Israel bomb a sovereign country and nobody say anything about it? You know, it was like, isn't that an act of war? And it was really kind of a naive question because I didn't know. You know 10 times what I know about the Middle East. Everything I've learned, I've had to, you know, research. You've been learning this stuff for years. So I started digging. And that's when I saw the connection to Russia. That's when I saw the Qatar and the, you know, in the gas field, and they wanted to run a pipeline through there, and the U.S. connection with them and Saudi and the Silk Road and China and Russia and this whole thing. Because I remember that aha day when I went, this is all about Russia. You know, it was like this awakening. You know, like the scales fell off my eyes, and I went, I'm onto something. I'm not that smart, but I am tenacious, you know, and a guy I used to work with said, you're like a pit bull. You don't give up. And I go, well, once I get my teeth into something, you know, that bugs me or I don't understand it, I don't like being ignorant, for one. I like to know what's going on because my country is falling apart. Like you said, we're $17+ trillion. By the time Obama's out, it'll be $20-23 trillion. $200 trillion in unfunded liabilities. We got three of the biggest bubbles we've ever had in the history of our country getting ready to pop, you know, and we're trying to, you know, cause a war with superpowers that have nuclear arms. I'm just like, I'm awake now, and then my goal is to wake people up. You know, I don't tell people, and this, and you've known me for, a couple years now. Oh my gosh. Anyway, you know, I've never told anybody how to vote, have I, ever? I never have, even through the primary, even through the third-party conversation. You know, in fact, that's when I started my group. I go, I need a place where I can research and have conversations with people and kind of, you know, post what I'm learning and what other people are learning. That's the only reason I built a group in the first place. You know, I built a group to be popular. I didn't build a group to, you know, post the news of the day. It's not why I built a group. It was kind of a place to dump stuff and have conversations with people who really cared and weren't sheep to mass media in this country, you know, and let's find out what's really going on behind the scenes for any issue, whether it's economics, whether it's foreign policy, whether it's the damn border, you know, whether it's whatever, you know, climate change, you want to have a serious conversation about what is all that crap coming out of the back of those jets that looks like it won't go away, you know, chemtrail, whatever, you know, to maybe even dig into some of the things that are called conspiracy theories and dig and find out, because all theories have some facts. The question is, you know, is it conjecture, is it Hegelian dialect where they're just trying to confuse you, or is there really something going on that we need to know about? Because I have to vote, and I have to pay freaking taxes, and they keep raising them because the government's out of control. I remember the first day I found out we had 1,100 bases around the world, that America's launched over 220 aggressive conflicts against foreign sovereign nations since World War II. 220, that we're in about 45 conflicts right now. How many people even know that we have military, we've expanded military in 40-plus countries in South Africa? How many people know that our president, in between golf games in Martha's Vineyard, just had some of the worst dictators from South America in the White House for a big old conference in a schmooze with some of the worst human rights violators in the world? You know, from Africa. I mean, it's like, do people even just stop and go, oh, what's going on in Africa? You know, that's a whole conversation in itself. You know, all this stuff ties together. But here's the thing, and this is why foreign policy is important, because it's your country involved in every situation going on in the world, good, bad, or indifferent, and you don't know about it. You remember when Rand did that talk at the Senate and he got up and talked about foreign aid? And he listed off what aid goes to and who the people were and the jets they were buying and the palaces they had and the conditions of how they treated people. And, you know, then they're burning our flag and we're giving them $10 billion. Here's one for you. How many people even know that the greatest funder of Sunni terrorism in the Middle East, including the Muslim Brotherhood, is Qatar? And how many people even know that we just sold them $11 billion? How many people know that Qatar – $11 billion in military equipment. How many people know that Qatar gets weapons to Hamas? And yet Qatar's our ally. Hamas is the bad guy, according to some people in the country, and Palestine and the Israel conflict, and then it's our weapons. How many people know that we were funding the so-called moderate rebels in Syria and training them, and now they've evolved into ISIS, and that's your tax dollars at work? How many people know that half of the weapons in Afghanistan, in an audit recently, a week or two ago, or last week, I don't even remember anymore, half of them are unaccounted for. Where'd they go? Taliban got them? Al-Qaeda got them? You know, how many people even know that only 3 of the 50 weapons depot in Libya, a sovereign nation that we blew to crap and destroyed that didn't have terrorism in it until we destroyed it, now it's a freaking jihad wonderland, as Rand Paul says, that 47 weapons depots all went into the hands of rebels and terrorists, and all those weapons got spread all through the Middle East and North and Africa. How many people even know that? How do you even give a shit? That's the part that frustrates me is maybe you don't know.
Of course not.
But the thing is, it's done in your name with your tax dollars, and then you turn around and you vote these jerks right back into power over and over and over and over again. You deserve the government you have voted into power. Oh, voting doesn't matter, Chris. Oh, bullcrap. That's what they want you to believe. You know, they want you to sit on the they want you to sit on the sideline and do nothing and hide in fear and watch the media and be told who to hate, who to fear, who we should bomb. And that's what they want you to do. Work, pay your taxes, struggle, barely survive, and we'll take care of you while we're spying on you. And that's what Americans are doing. What do we get? Well, I bet you we don't get 37% of the people in this country to even show up for midterm elections.
Not even close. I mean, some of these races were decided.
I don't know what the numbers are yet. I'm just guessing because that's what it was last
year. It's low. It's pretty low.
It's terrible.
The only place where you've had increased turnout is, like, for instance, in Mississippi, where you had an increased turnout because Cochran and Barber went after Democrats to steal nomination for McDaniel. That's the kind of and besides the point, I got actually we got two clips coming up, and believe it or not, we're already 10 minutes into the second hour.
Oh my God!
We got two clips coming up. One's going to talk a little bit about elections. The other one's a little bit longer, and it talks about some of this other manipulation pressure. I think we're going to hit that one first because we're already 10 minutes over. Real quick, just a little housekeeping. At 11 p.m. Eastern, 2 hours into the show, if you're listening in your browser now live, you will lose the feed. You will not be able to hear it. The only way you can hear it is to call in and listen on your handset, 646-649-1013. At 11 p.m. Eastern, we're going to try to wrap up by 11:15, 11:20, but we go into overtime. You can't hear it live if you're listening in the browser. If you're listening in archives in the browser or on podcast, just keep going. It won't stop. And if you're listening, you see the scrolling graphics. If you go below those scrolling graphics, there is a button that says or a link that says download. Right-click on that. You get an MP3 that you download on your hard drive. You can email it to people. You can burn CDs and take it to, you know, your Tea Party meetings, Campaign for Liberty meetings, Republican Party meetings. Share the information. And it doesn't mean you agree with every position that Chris and I have or exactly what we're saying. The whole purpose of what we're trying to convey is that if you are on the, quote, right, meaning that you are someone who believes in the Constitution, in ordered liberty, in our founding principles, in the Declaration of Independence, in sound money, in free markets, and as maximum freedom, not anarchy, but as much freedom as possible in order our lives together, you got to work together. You got to stop fighting with each other over issues of things that don't really matter to us as Americans living together. It might matter to you personally, okay? When I see images of Christians being slaughtered in the land where Christianity was founded by Christ himself, it makes me sick to my stomach, and I'll do whatever I can to stop it. I don't think that it is right for us to demand that our government do something about it. However, since your government is causing these problems, is arming the ones that are slaughtering them, then yes, we have to do something about it. The thing we have to do about it isn't necessarily over there. It's over here. Without the United States of America government, without the CIA, without Mossad, there would be no Hamas, there would be no Al-Qaeda, there would be no ISIS.
Taliban.
And if you notice, there could be a Taliban.
Sorry.
But that's besides the point. It's not like Muslims aren't going to try to kill you, okay? But the fact is that they can't get organized and conduct modern warfare in the manner that they have been without training from those of us who sold them the weapons. That's the problem, okay? ISIS was nothing, but we built it. We built it to topple Assad, a secular Arab Baath regime in Syria that actually had people in relative peace, okay? We built ISIS to topple him, and then it got blowback into Iraq, and now we want to fight them in Iraq while we're supplying them in Syria. It's insanity. It is insanity unless that is the end game that they're trying to play. That's just like Chris just told you. We send weapons to Qatar. They send them to Hamas. Then they fire these rockets that hit nobody. I mean, I think they killed 3 Israeli citizens in this entire conflict. Oh, rockets are raining down on Israel, and so we supply Israel with this Iron Dome, and they blow the crap out of, you know, indiscriminate civilians in Gaza that had nothing to do with Hamas. It's,
oh, God.
It's the old tactic of financing and arming all sides in a conflict and fulfilling the Fabian socialist Keynesian dream of a broken window. If you put them in debt and fund them with weapons to blow each other up, then they're going to have to go into even more debt to come back and have you help them rebuild everything that they just blew up. That's the game. It's not right. It's insane. And it's not
insane.
Helping us. Because we, as Americans, aren't getting any of the economic benefits of this horrible evil that's being perpetrated in our name. It's going to a few connected elite bankers and corporations and corrupt politicians. That's the game that's being played, and you're sitting there with the, I stand with Israel, oh, the Palestinians are victims, blah, 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 when the problem is here. The problem is at home. The problem is in Washington, D.C. and New York, and you have to focus on that problem. Because you're not going to solve the problems of the world over there. Our foreign policy is a captured interest. Until you get control of, and Chris says it all the time, you get control of your economics you can get control of your foreign policy. And without those two things, you can forget about liberty. You can forget about your border. You can forget about your gun rights. You can forget about the NSA. You can forget about all that other stuff. Nothing will change. Those are the two key issues. That's what you should be focusing on. But they gin it up. They play mind games with you. They put pressure on you to back you into a corner so that you will scream for the solution. You will react, and they'll offer you the solution, and that solution is exactly what they wanted you to want in the first place. You're going to have to learn to think, and that's the point of this show. Stop fighting with each other, work together, and start fixing the problems that we are seeing. You want to throw anything in there, Chris, or should we go to this clip about pressure and war?
Yeah, one word, insane. Another word, evil. Another word, greed. Another word, out of control. Another word, the world is not happy with us anymore. Go ahead, play the clip.
All right, here we go. Folks, this is it's a nine-minute clip, and we'll be back on the other side. We'll have about another half hour of live time to talk about this. And then as we're approaching the top of the hour, if you want to continue to listen, call in 646-649-1013. The latter clip is a little shorter, but it talks a little bit about the election process and about how things can be changed. And that's a pretty important discussion to have. We'll try to touch on that briefly because a lot of people have fear of either I'm not going to vote because it doesn't matter, or I'm going to vote for either one of the two parties because voting for a third party is a throwaway, or I'm only going to vote third party because I don't trust all this kind of chaos. There's a reason that's going on, and it is a managed reaction. That's what they want. In fact, many times they want you to go third party in order that they suppress the vote for the two duopoly parties and they get the people that they want in place. And frankly, they hedge their bets. So whether you vote, whether the Democrat wins or the Republican, it would be the same. You're hearing stuff now like, if John McCain had won in 2008, things would be totally different. Well, you're damn right they'd be totally different. We would have already blown up the entire Middle East. At least Obama was tepid in going in that regard. In fact, if you look at the Africa meeting Chris just brought up, one of the African leaders that wasn't here was the president of Egypt.
Egypt, yeah.
He was busy actually dealing with the Gaza problem. Yeah, keep in mind, just because those people, for the most part, happen to be Arabs and Muslims, Egypt is in Africa. Look at a map. You can't read. Look at a map. It's a picture. Okay? It's a picture. So, you know, learn. And the Suez Canal is there, and they're building a second Suez Canal, and that's not a minor economic or strategic issue. That's a pretty big deal. Learn and think. That's the most important thing. Think as an American and quit being captured by foreign interests and thinking like an idiot. This is how they get you.
Pressure from above and below. It's the strategy that Colonel House laid down in his book, Philip Drew Administrator. Deliberately create problems, and then offer only those solutions that result in the expansion of government. Create conditions so frightful at home and abroad that the abandonment of personal liberties and national sovereignty will appear as a reasonable price for a return to domestic tranquility and world peace.
At one point, the market fell as if down a well, over 700 points.
Apple shares are just getting hammered this morning.
We're down by between 3% and 4.5% generally across these markets. Let's talk about the speed with which we are watching this market deteriorate. We're red everywhere, essentially, down by 4-5%. We're down over 16%. Dow, at the same time, has fallen about 18%. The stock market is now down 21%.
Because we're now down 43%.
What in the world is happening on Wall Street?
It's like having a pine cone shoved in my head.
Almost everything there completely wiped out. And the NASDAQ, everything and more has been completely wiped out.
The Dow traders are standing there watching in amazement, and I don't blame them.
That's not right. How can the price be going down? Something's wrong.
Their estimation was that by 2 o'clock that afternoon, $5.5 trillion would have been drawn out of the money market system of the United States, would have collapsed the entire economy of the United States, and within 24 hours, the world economy would have collapsed.
was the... We owe $70 trillion.
I understand that, but
you don't
you
to walk out
say,
a $4 trillion solution,
okay,
which is basically just a way for the Democrats to avoid dealing with this until 2017. I'm not here to talk about plans to deal with this till 2017. I'm saying we've got a real problem, and I'm tired of Republicans and Democrats who either want Republicans who want to burn the place to the ground, and Democrats, with all due respect, who want to offer a plan that gets it through the their end of their second term of their presidency, and then screws me and my kids
okay,
when it's over. And until we do that, we have to deal with the extraction that is at foot. It is the reason the financial markets are behaving the way they're behaving. That is a mathematical fact. This is not some opinion. This is a mathematical fact. Tens of trillions of dollars are being extracted from the United States of America. Democrats aren't doing it. Republicans are not doing it. An entire integrated system, financial system, trading system, taxing system that was created by both parties over a period of two decades is at work on our entire country right now. And we're sitting here arguing about whether we should do the $4 trillion plan that kicks the can down the road for the president for 2017 or burn the place to the ground, both of which are reckless, irresponsible, and stupid. And the fact of the matter is, until we actually, and I'm sorry to lose my temper, but I tell you what, I've been coming on TV for 3 years doing this. And the fact of the matter is that there's a refusal on both the Democratic and the Republican side of the aisle to acknowledge the mathematical problem, which is that the United States of America is being extracted. It's being extracted through banking, it's being extracted through trade, and it's being extracted through taxation. And there's not a single politician that is stepping forward.
The IMF is used to loot countries for
yes.
Western banks.
Yes.
And finally, the Russians and the Chinese and the Indians have caught on.
Yeah. They're going to set up their own looting regime, right, to do that. Yeah, we've been living off of this credit card economy ever since we were able to do that after World War II. As you point out, so many other countries actually have a much sounder economy than we do. So what happens? You said it's going to be massive inflation. We all know that. I mean, just how bad do you think it's going to be? Is it going to be kind of a hyperinflation once the world goes off of the American dollar?
I can't predict, but I can predict U.S. living standards will take a big hit.
Yes.
But this could be long in coming. It doesn't mean it's going to happen this year or next. It could be long in coming. I think that Willis, he sees the direction of things. And, of course, I see the same directions. But I think he's a little bit premature in the actual happening. But, of course, it could happen quickly.
Well, one of the things that he mentioned that I thought was interesting was he thought that the NSA spying on Germany was largely out of a paranoia that they might be trying to make some financial move. Now, whether or not that's true, certainly what we have done, what's come to light with the NSA spying has prepared the German public to want to essentially distance themselves from us. And, of course, we dictate sanctions to them, tell them they have to join with us on our foreign policy. I would imagine that a lot of countries, not just Germany, are getting pretty sick and tired of that.
Well, they may be. Actually, one of the main parts of one of the titles of Senate 2277, the bill, is to ensure our integration of the German military into the American military. So clearly there is the intent to put Germany in a position that its military is dependent on American operational procedures and technology and cannot act independently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what Washington uses NATO to do. It incorporates the militaries of the other countries into it in a way that they are dependent on the communication system controlled by Washington and all the weapon systems and everything else. So in a way, it makes these militaries unable to function outside the American umbrella. So I don't know that, to come back to what we were talking about, that Putin's bet will pan out for him. Instead, what's happening is there's slaughter of these Russian-speaking people who are living in territories that formerly were part of Russia itself, territories that were attached to the Ukraine by various Soviet Communist Party leaders. And this, of course, if it continues and these people continue to be slaughtered the way the Palestinians are being slaughtered in Gaza by the Israeli military, it will tend to turn against Putin inside Russia. Right now he has very high standing, but at some point he needs to take action to stop the slaughter of these people who are formerly Russian citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And if he waits too long, it becomes more difficult because we have seen the announcement that the United States are now sending military advisors to Ukraine. Now, this is the beginning then of U.S. direct involvement in the conflict. If the advisors, if we follow the Vietnam pattern,
yes.
Next there'll be fighting. And so then this makes it harder for Russia to deal with the situation in a decisive way without encountering U.S. forces. Whereas if Putin had accepted the request for reunification from the Ukrainian provinces the way he did from Crimea, the whole thing would be over with by now because the Ukraine has no capability of engaging Russian military forces. And Washington would not have had the time to build up all the propaganda against Russia. It would have shown Europe a very clear, decisive action by Russia. They would see that they don't want part of any American plan that puts them into conflict with such decisive decision-making. And this would have been the end of the crisis. So I think that Putin, he made a reasonable and responsible bet.
This isn't a joke. People are dying. Children are dying. People are being slaughtered, murdered, imprisoned. Your credit is financing it. And if you think these things are unrelated, from Ukraine to Gaza to Israel to ISIS, you're out to Africa, you're out of your mind. You got this mentality. Remember something. 100 years ago, when World War I started, they didn't call it World War I. They called it the Great War. They thought it was just a huge war, and they thought it was the war to end all wars and all this kind of crap. And then the end of it, they set it up so that World War II would happen. Then the Great War became World War I. You're thinking that World War III is going to look like World Wars I and World War II. You know, you go back 30, 40 years, and people were thinking that World War III was basically going to be nuclear Armageddon. Well, that I'm not saying nukes aren't going to be involved, but it is not going to be, mutually assured destruction with missiles flying from Russia, from the Soviets into the United States and back and forth, and everybody gets annihilated. This is not War Games, the Matthew Broderick movie. This is already happening. World War IV, and it's World War IV, if you count the Cold War as World War III. And that's actually a neocon concept. But if you think of it in that term, we're already in a world war. It's a world war that's happening right now. It's only going to accelerate and escalate, but it's already underway. And this, you heard Roberts, they're talking about it. And there are plans for nukes to be involved, biological weapons. This is going to be part of it. But most of it is in mind control. But just keep in mind, World War IV, the world war, the global war you're seeing now is basically the neocons versus everybody else. And you, my dear friends, are the host for these parasitic pricks. That's what's happening. That's what you are seeing. And it's going to involve economic collapse. It's going to involve multiple conflicts. It's going to involve significant restrictions of liberty here at home. It's going to involve the erasure of your borders. It's going to involve national disintegration and an escalating police state. That's where it's going. And the momentum is heading in that direction. Can you stop it? Well, I don't know. I don't know what tomorrow is going to be. I don't know when this is going to happen. But the fact is that none of us do. What you do know is that we are heading in that direction. Unless you get off your ass and do something about it now, that's where it's going. And it's disgusting because the bombs you heard, the shooting you heard, the stuff you see on TV, it's happening here. Don't think that this is like one and two where we send our boys over there and some of them die and some of them come home as heroes. This war will be fought here in your streets. That's how bad it's going to be. You're not immune from this one. And it's on your shoulders. You're the only ones who can stop it. Because for the most part, it's a mind war. They put the pressure on you. They teach you who you have to hate and who you have to fear, and then they poke that enemy so that that enemy has to act. You heard Roberts there talking about the fact that Putin is being very methodical and restrained. But at some point, he won't have a choice. And what the West is doing, when I say, you know, it really just pisses me off. You used to say the West. I was basically referring to Christendom, to Europe and the United States, and we were the good guys. Right, but what's happening now is we've been taken over by a parasitic, and we're the host, and there's a parasite that's controlling the strings. And NATO and IMF and Fed and all this stuff is designed to pull people into your sphere, which is why Roberts pointed out there that the German military is basically under NATO command, which means that it takes its orders from D.C. and Brussels. Okay, and so what you have here is you're pushing against an enemy who isn't really an enemy. I'm not saying they're our friends, but they're not our enemy. But because of what's happening with BRICS, which is Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, and a bunch of other countries, setting up their own development bank, their own gold bank, their own trade deals, so the end of the petrodollar and the rise of the petro-yuan, which is the renminbi, the people's money of China. And it's only going to be, quote, the reserve currency for a while because you don't need a reserve currency. All these countries are going to be independently trading and marking to the market in their own currencies. There's no need for a reserve currency anymore because there was after World War II to a degree because you blew up the world and we were the only ones who made stuff, so everything was done in dollars. But now it's multipolar, and these people are setting up trade agreements with each other, and it's kind of that state-run capitalism while we're over here faltering and falling apart. And we don't have free markets. We don't have sound money. We're a captured interest, and you're letting the fear control you and divide you. So, oh, we don't want the libertarians taking over the Republican Party. Oh, the rhinos are terrible. Oh, we can't go third party. That's the kind of stuff they got you ginned up against. And, you know, the whole, pick sides in foreign conflicts that have nothing to do with the United States and then fight each other here at home based on that. I can't tell you how many people I see fighting all day long about Israel and Gaza and the Palestinians. We're falling apart here. Our border's a sieve here, right? That's what's going on. And what does your candy-ass community organizer-in-chief do? He's had his African dictator buddies here, and now he's taken football for 2 weeks to Martha's Vineyard because he's arrived. He's one of the elite now. He's just a meat puppet for them. He doesn't know what he's doing. He takes his orders from whoever gives them to him. He's just the face they picked twice. Why? Because Karl Rove found the one guy who could lose to Barack Obama in 2012. Disgusting. And they had to steal the election. And you notice, by the way, that whenever your community organizer-in-chief speaks about ISIS, he refers to it as ISIL, which is, as opposed to Islamic State in Syria, it's Islamic State in Iraq and the Levant. And the Levant is basically the Fertile Crescent. It runs from Turkey down through Lebanon, Israel, Palestine, and over into Egypt, right? This is or what we used to call in the old days when we were trying to liberate Jerusalem from the Muslims, Outremer, right? This is basically for two reasons. One, he can't let you associate these organ-eating, child-murdering, genocidal assholes with the rebels in Syria. Because remember, we're funding the rebels in Syria. We're training the rebels in Syria. So he doesn't want you to realize that we're the ones that have built these terrorist pricks. And secondly, because what they're telling you is that plan that General Wesley Clark talked about, toppling seven countries in 5 years, they've adjusted it. And it's not so much your military that's going to be toppling it. It's ISIS, which is trained by your military, which is funded by your credit. And when you know, when you got advisors going into Iraq again, and you got advisors going into Ukraine, as soon as they send advisors someplace, and they tell you, no boots on the ground, first they're empowering the enemy because the enemy thinks, well, they're not going to bring troops in here. But secondly, basically those are boots on the ground. And it's going to escalate. And you are going to send your children over there to fight and die so they can prop up their paper fiat currency regime, instill a police state at a level you've never seen before because the technology has never been available like it is now. Orwell could have dreamed of what's capable now. And it's all going to come here. And remember, everything they do overseas, everything they do with the economy, all the crap that they give you and then revise the numbers down, then revise the numbers up and tell you there's no inflation and easing's going on and all that kind of stuff. And you don't have to know what half of it means. But what you have to know is that they're trying to do is gin up your fear to paralyze you so you don't act as Americans with liberty in their hearts, but you act as drones who do the bidding of your master, and you think it's your choice. And that's how I see it, Chris.
Yes, sir. wow, the big picture. What's amazing to me is how people can get caught up in the Israeli-Palestine situation, and they will ignore all the other things that are going on, which is really the big issue. Israel and Palestine do this every couple, 3 years, and everybody gets all riled up, and everybody picks sides, and everybody goes to hell, and, you know, 250,000 people protesting in Italy, and it's 24/7. You said it. You nailed it. It ain't going to solve anything. Nothing's going to change. You know why? Nobody wants to solve it. God. You have to understand the large picture and the players. Go back earlier this year. China, who's been a large purchaser of U.S. debt, because that's how we bought cheap crap from China, is we had to sell them our bad debt, our bad paper. And that's how we, you know, funded stuff so you could shop at Walmart and buy cheap crap. That's been going on for a long time. Well, the trade deficit right now, China sits on over $3 trillion with the U.S. trade dollars that they got to figure out what to do with. And they sit on $1.3 trillion of our bad debt. And countries like China, Russia, India, Brazil, the BRICS countries, and many other countries, including Europe, and countries who bought a lot of our bad debt in the 2008 crisis, saw who we elected and saw our Congress do nothing to fix the underlying problems of our currency issues in this country, and then turn around and rebuild huge bubbles. You know, in the stock market, we did, you know, the housing market bubble. I mean, it's just they fixed nothing. They solved nothing. And then the Fed prints, $4.5 trillion and infuses it into the economy. And so the stock market looks like it's doing something, but it's not really doing anything. It's just, you know, certain groups of people rebuying their own stocks, and you know, it's just insanity. And so the rest of the world, see, the problem with most Americans is we think we are the world, and really the world is a big place. And there's other countries out there. And they're not all third world dirtbag countries. There's some pretty sophisticated countries that are very wealthy, that produce a lot, and China's one of them, and still growing. They had a slowdown. They're all the way down to 7.5%. Oh, my God, China's slowing down. It'd be nice to get off of zero here. But that's how the news feeds you the scare, because China said, we're not buying any more of your debt. We don't trust you anymore. You're not fixing your problems. Your debt's going to collapse. You're printing all this money. So if we keep buying your debt, by the time we get paid back, it'll be worth half of what it is. So why in the hell would anybody with a brain and a decent economy want that deal? So a lot of countries are starting to move away and dump the U.S. debt. Well, that's the only reason that we can buy shit is because we print money and sell our debt to other countries. That's our import-export game right there. We don't have any money. I don't know why people can't get that. We don't have any money. Our money's fake. And when inflation hits, or hyperinflation, if you listen to Roberts and Rickards and Schiff, hits $100, which is only worth about 2 cents of what it was before we started the Fed, is going to be worth, you have $100 in your hand overnight it'd be worth 50, and then it'd be worth 25. And the thing about inflation is it's been a gradual thing in our country, and they've been able to kind of manipulate it to keep it on a gradual. We'd had some ups and downs and things like that, and we had some booms. You know, our inflation went up and kind of freaked everybody out. But the next one that's coming is going to be huge chunks. It'd be like boom, $50. Boom, now it's worth 25. That's coming. So let's say China says or Russia says, I don't want any more of your bad debt. You won't fix your problems, and you're trying to export your inflation to us, and we have other things planned, and we got all these other countries we're doing business with now, and so screw you. That's basically what happened. So as soon as they did that, and they started trading in their currency, and there's a lot more behind the scenes in this, but they started trading their own currency, cut the deal with Russia. You know, Z, who I call the Energizer Buddies, you know, every 4 days he's in another country cutting a new trade deal, and he's taken that $3 trillion, besides buying U.S. properties and factories and businesses, he's also using it to fund loans, grants, infrastructure development in countries that they're wanting to do business with, you know, creating that symbiotic relationship. It's pretty damn free enterprise, and you say, yeah, you know, it's government-driven capitalism, but it's still pretty freaking powerful. And so the U.S. is threatened. Why? Because they want everybody to buy their bad debt, because that's the only thing that keeps this lie going, is to be able to continue to print it, continue to shove that bad debt on other countries, and to continue to buy stuff from other countries because we don't make anything anymore, so that Americans will keep voting the same assholes in power and pretend like everything's okay. That's really the big picture. So when BRICS got together, which it's only been about 6 years, when they got together not so much because they hate America. I don't think anybody hates America. I think they have the same opinion of Washington, D.C. as the rest of us do. But I think they just go, you know what? They're going down, and I ain't going down with them. We've crawled out of the pits of hell of our own. You know, like Russia came from communism. China came from being a third-world nation. You know what I mean? With billion people who barely feed themselves, to an industrial, you know, machine with a massive middle class and a very large, rich, you know, growing wealth sector. And I don't think they want to go back to that. You know, we've been fat and lazy and rich for so damn long that we just can't hear the message that, and I'm of the age, I grew up with my grandparents who were Depression era. My parents grew up in the Depression. You know, my mom didn't have a frickin' flushing toilet in her house till she graduated from high school. So, you know, I have that experience. Even though I didn't live it, it was real for me. And so these other countries, they have that experience. It was real for them 20, 30 years ago. So they're like going, we need to form some kind of new system to protect ourselves from those crooked, corrupt a-holes that those people keep voting for in that country. That's supposed to be the superpower and the reserve currency of the world. That's why BRICS formed. I don't think it was out of hatred. I think it was out of survival. You know, now the U.S. is freaking the hell out because we're already losing our reserve currency status since the late 90s. It's been going down. Actually, our biggest competitors, the EU. Isn't that funny how they're trying to get the EU and Russia to be at odds with each other? Interesting. And then you got that new TTIP trade deal going on that nobody knows about. That's a secret trade deal that basically, you know, forces countries to give up their sovereignty to U.S. corporations operating in those countries. You know, that they're trying to shove down all these countries' throats, especially the EU or the European countries. And they're, like, resisting it because they don't want to give up their sovereignty to the United States because they're concerned about what the United States has proven that it's unwilling to change. So here's the bigger picture. So the war and the conflict, I don't care what country you pick. You pick a country, you know, like if you interviewed me and you said, okay, tell me about Syria. Tell me about Iraq. What's really going on there? Tell me about Qatar. Tell me about Saudi Arabia. What's going on, really going on with Israel? And I could give you a link back, and it always comes back to gas, oil, pipelines, trade routes, and U.S. dollar. And it always comes back to two countries, China and Russia. That's it. That's all you got to know. And then from there, you start to see these connecting points, and then all of a sudden foreign policy, you go, oh, okay, I get it. I get it. So we're trying to, like, literally, right on the edge of World War IV, because these countries want to protect themselves from our bad politicians, and the neocons believe that we're supposed to be the empire, you know, the new American century, right? You know, study that crap. You know, read the document. You'll go, wow, that's pretty imperialistic. Yeah, it is. And you know what? The rest of the country, the world doesn't want to be, you know, a sovereign, an unsovereign state of an empire. I think a lot of countries have already been through that crap. So there's a battle going on. You got a group that control the Washington. Well, you got a group that controls this country who thinks we should be an empire and we should be able to tell everybody what to do, blow shit up anytime we want, prop up dictators, topple governments, you know, because we are it. We're the moral authority of the world. And then you got the rest of us that don't have a clue what's going on. And then you got the rest of the world going, I'm sorry, but that's not the deal we want. And so you've got a conflict, and it is a war. It is literally a war. And there's a lot of small conflicts going on all over the world. You ain't seen nothing yet. They're going to escalate. But the big war is the economics and the trade war. That's the one that's really lighting up and getting fun to watch. And fun, I mean, in a sarcastic way.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, the shooting wars, Chris, are always a result of the economic wars, period.
Yes.
Just always.
So that's where we're at. I mean, we're, you know, this is a vital topic. I mean, a lot of people, I'm sure, are like, oh, why are we talking about other countries? Well, because all those other countries affect us, and we affect them, and we're at a point where there's a massive conflict going on, and it dictates everything, and you're paying for it. That's the problem. You're paying for it. You don't even have a say in it. Did you get to vote on it? Did you get to vote on blowing up Libya? Did we even have a public debate? It just happened.
Nope.
It just happened. And then it was announced, we're blowing this freaking country to hell. Well, wasn't he our ally for like 30 years? Yeah. Didn't he have like free health care and really low interest loans, and he produced money, free money for his economy instead of like the Fed that produces money and charges interest, and he had a gold standard on his currency, and what was that all about? It was about a little mini revolution and some protests? No. It was about the fact he was moving away from the U.S. trade dollar. He wanted to trade oil for euros. And the U.S. was like, no, I'm sorry, you ain't going to do that, so have a bomb. That's some pretty sick shit, Rex. And the worst part of this conversation is the average American knows nothing, doesn't want to know anything, and doesn't think it involves him. That's the worst part.
Just get those guys. Just go get them.
Yeah, get them.
Yeah. We'll put a boot in your ass.
Yeah. You know, Gaddafi. Oh, he's evil. I don't know. How's it look in Libya right now? You know, Assad must go. Why does Assad must go? What the hell has that got to do with you and me? In fact, here's one of those little weird facts that most people don't know. Where do you think all the Christians went when we blew up Iraq? What country did they go to?
Sure.
Who let them in and who protected them?
Yeah,
Syria. That's
Syria.
The guy that your government says must go. And now they're killing Christians and butchering them. Their favorite thing now is they're beheading little children. Isn't that wonderful? That's the people
they behead kids. They crucify people. Yep.
And then they put on YouTube.
It's Obama's army.
Watch it. Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah. Yeah, that's Obama's army.
God.
That's Obama's army. And look, here's the crazy thing, Chris. You know, most Americans don't understand this stuff because, frankly, we don't really have to, or we haven't had to, because we got two gigantic oceans separating us from everybody else except for Canada and Mexico. Now, of course, you know, they've erased the line in Mexico, so we got a chaos down there. But generally speaking, other than Mexico and Canada, we don't really have anything to do with anybody else. But our interventionist, foreign adventuristic, pseudo-imperial foreign policy has got us entangled in all this stuff, and it is killing us. And you have to understand something. The world changes, okay? When they had the communist revolution in Russia, it was in, you know, they did all the communist stuff that they usually do, but they also put new marriage laws, new family laws. They encouraged sexual libertinism and hedonism, and they kind of abolished the family. Why? If you want to control people, you got to get rid of the institutions of civil society, the family, the church, the free associations. You have to replace those. create a vacuum, destroy those so that the state is the only option. It's part of that Hegelian issue we talked about. If you destroy the family, if you pay people to not get married, if you pay people to have children out of wedlock, if children are raised in overcrowded government indoctrination centers without a mommy and a daddy at home, bombarded with pornography and drugs all day long, and video games that mess with your head, and you wonder why they're dumber as they get older. You wonder why they're not able to form thoughts. You wonder why they can't have any critical thinking. All they can do is regurgitate information. They can only regurgitate slogans. They only think about eating, screwing, and getting stoned. And then they don't have their own families, right? They have kids, but they don't have their own families. And the family's gone. So, you know, oh, now we got a problem. What are we going to do? Oh, the government can fix that. You know, and you encourage irreligion. People don't have any kind of sense of the transcendent, of a higher purpose, of an objective morality. And then what happens? Anything goes, and it creates chaos. Well, who's going to fix that? The government's going to fix that. This is what's going on. So they instituted that in Russia, this, you know, the Trotsky-Lenin era. And then they realized it wasn't working, and they retooled it a little bit. And Stalin actually, bad as he was, killed 20 million people, allied with the Allies, right, in World War II, right? And it was kind of a terrible wound for Russia, and they had to kind of recover from that. And then with Khrushchev and Brezhnev, what you had was that old Trotskyite internationalist revolution. They were financing, you know, regimes in you know, Cuba and in South America. They invaded Afghanistan. They were sending the Red Brigades into Spain. And, you know, they were basically trying to create a global communist revolution. And people in those countries got sick of this Russian intervention. But they couldn't withstand it because the Russians were so powerful. What was their option? They came to us. They came to the United States. They came to our side. And at that time, we were much better than we are now. We actually helped. We actually set up some free market issues. We weren't spreading democracy, but we were working with a lot of these people, and they kind of came into our fold. And basically, the world divided. You're either with the Americans or you're with the Soviets, right? And that was the big battle. That ended. When it ended, right, Russia was devastated. Europe, Eastern Europe especially, was devastated. The Europeans were full-on socialists because they didn't have to spend a dime on their military. We did all that, right? And then we started getting these neocon infiltrators from the PNAC and AEI and all these other things, and these globalists with their Trotskyite roots of international revolution. But the international revolution they wanted was a moral revolution of democracy. Democracy. You know, the will of the people, democracy. We got to have mob rule, the majority. Except that whenever that majority votes the way they don't want, like when the Palestinians voted for Hamas, they didn't like it, or when the Egyptians got rid of the Muslim Brotherhood that we were supporting over there. You know, notice that Sisi didn't come to the African meeting. He's a little bit busy. He negotiated that truce, that 72-hour truce with Hamas and Israel. He was blockading Hamas so that they couldn't get weapons in to keep the war going. He was actually acting as a good actor. Now, is that because he's a good guy or because the Egyptians are wonderful? No, it's because they're neighbors. They live there. Whatever happens in Israel and Gaza affects Egypt. They have separatists in the Sinai because of the chaos going on over there. And remember something, Hamas is not a monolith either. First of all, most Palestinians don't like Hamas. They voted for him probably because they were afraid. But Hamas is also divided. There are different factions. And keep in mind that Hamas was created by Mossad in order to diminish the influence of Fatah, which is the PLO, mostly in the West Bank. You know, this is the kind of blowback you get when you start mucking around. And then everybody's different interests. Everybody starts playing you because you're the money and you're the guns. So they start playing you. And, of course, people are getting sick of us being the interventionists. And so who are they turning to? The sober ones. The ones that are intervening, but they're intervening in a more amicable manner as partners. That's the Russians and the Chinese. And we're the ones mucking things up, and people are getting tired of it. And every time we muck things up over there, it gets worse for us over here. So quit thinking like imperialists, because unlike normal empires of the past, we are not raiding these countries, killing their people, and taking their stuff, either so that we can go over there and live in their land or that we can get all their resources and bring them back here. You are being used to plunder them for the benefit of somebody else. It's insane. And you're allowing it because you're afraid and you let them manage your mind and get you focused on the wrong things. And they create these pressure points so that you've only got one option and you think it's your choice, and it's not. But you have all the power. You have all the power. Now, the pain's coming, right? Dollar's going to collapse. There's going to be shortages. There's going to be hyperinflation. There's going to be war. How long will that last? What will happen afterwards? That's up to you. But if you live in fear, if you let them manipulate you through fear, what comes up next is not going to be better. It's going to be worse. And you're going to hand on to your children not only no American dream or a lower lifestyle. You're going to hand them chains for generations. And it's going to be your fault because you were too busy picking sides in foreign wars and fighting with each other over here instead of ousting the parasite that has taken over our country. About 3 minutes, you're going to lose the feed. If you want to listen to the rest of the show, we're going to do a little Justin Amash and then try to wrap up. 646-649-1013. That is 646-649-1013. Chris, you want to throw anything there, or should we go to Justin?
I think that, you know, you covered some great points, and you tied it back. And I think that's what both of you and I are saying, is that you need to know this stuff. Now, you made a great point. In the past, we didn't, because we empowered government, you know, to run our government, you know, and to run the country and to keep our shores safe. And for a long time, that was kind of what it did. Okay, I can argue that it's been doing bad things for a long time. But, you know, there was this kind of American ideal, you know, this Reagan shining city on the hill, and we defeated communism and with the good in the world and all that kind of wonderful stuff. And I think that we were, and the people were, and there was a goodwill and a prosperity era, and people quit paying attention. Because if you think about these neocons and their insanity and this empire, it was really built aggressively after that era, because these people figured out, wow, we're really powerful, and Russia's kind of crumbling, and we're kind of it, and the world uses our currency, which allows us to, you know, maintain this high, massive debt and continue to fund this, and let's just go ahead and take over the whole damn world. That kind of really took over in that era, even though there were signs of it all the way back. But and we didn't see it coming. We didn't see it happening because they didn't ask your permission. And you were busy chasing the American dream and busy thinking we're all that in a bag of chips. In a lot of ways we were, but there was also a lot, this undercurrent of, I don't know, man, I hate using this word, but I would say evil. You know what I mean? That was occurring and building in the government structure of our country, and it took off on this wild, crazy ride that the average person knew nothing about. Well, now you can't ignore it anymore. That's the point that you and I are really trying to make, is that you have to educate yourself. We do a lot of work so that we can come on this show or on our groups and actually zone in on these topics so that you don't have to do all that work. You just got to get involved and learn and get caught up with what's going on. So then instead of posting the damn news of the day, you can actually engage your friends and say, hey, let's talk about this. Or why don't you come to this group, because they're talking about something nobody else is talking about, and join this group and let's get in this conversation. Because like you said, and this is not some crazy conspiracy theory. I know we get kind of riled up. People probably think we're half nuts and we're all, you know, off our rockers. But this is
only
real. The stuff that you and I talk about, the economics guys that we follow are some of the best in the world. And they predicted some of them predicted the last three crashes. These guys know their crap. I follow them. You follow them. We spend time to become educated on these things. Foreign policy, the military, you know, when I said 1,100 bases, I wonder how many people just went, oh, I didn't know that. Wow, that's a lot. Yeah, it is. You're paying for it. Do you know what they're doing in Africa? How many people even know what Afrikaans' role is? How many people know that Sudan had a revolution and they split the country? I thought borders were sacrosanct, according to the U.S. when Crimea voted to reconnect with Russia. It's funny how that works, right? You know, in other words, does the rule of law matter? Do morals matter in the decisions that we make in our country and our government? You know, do morals matter in our economic decisions that we make? Whenever you listen to Rand Paul get up there on the Senate floor and read off all the money that we give to all these crazy, insane human rights violators in these other countries so they can buy yachts and planes and jets and palaces and people can starve and be oppressed and be tortured, and that's your tax dollars. Does it matter when you finally wake up and go, wow, I didn't know that? And that's fine. I didn't know it either a few years ago. You know, I just sat down one day and said, shit, my country's falling apart. I need to get smarter. I need to figure out what's going on. You know, every time I work my ass off and accumulate stuff, they have another crash. You know, what the hell? Why can't they fix the last one? Why do we keep crashing? Why do I keep losing money in the market? You know, why do I keep starting over? I'm getting kind of old. I'm getting tired of starting over. You know, and I finally said, you know, I got to figure this crap out. That's where it started for me, you know. And why the hell are we electing a community organizer to run the most powerful country in the face of the earth? Oh, my God. And why the hell they run that freaking psychotic, loves every war he could ever think of, McCain? You know what I mean? I mean, what the hell was that? And so I started asking questions. And some people have been awake a lot longer than I have. But that's what we're here for, to educate. Politically, I haven't really told anybody what my politics are. I mean, I believe in the Constitution, sound money, sane foreign policy. I think most Americans would agree with that. I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Libertarian. I'm not here to tell you who to vote for. I'm here to educate. That's all I care. Educate. Because then you can make a decision about what you think is right or wrong, but at least you're going to do it on facts instead of some bull crap coming out of CNN or Fox News. I can't believe people still, after the 2012 primary and what happened, would trust a thing Fox says. They put just enough conservatives on there that you people get up there and go, yeah, this is the only voice for conservatives and sound government and then the Constitution. Oh, bull crap, man. Roger Ailes is just as much a globalist as the rest of them. They just got it down where they can sucker you in so you can listen to Hannity, you know, pick the enemy of the week for you. You know what I mean? I mean, come on, people. Wake up.
Was Hannity making out with Ben Netanyahu last week? I think I saw that.
Oh, don't get me started. Yeah. No, and there's a lot. And I enjoy learning. I don't enjoy what I'm learning, if that makes sense. You think I enjoy this, to see this, to get up one day and or to be on that foreign group I was on and somebody says, you know, Americans can't read? You know what I mean? It hurts. You know, my mom is a sociology, history, dual master's degree major, and she started filling my head full of this stuff that America was going to decline and why when I was in grade school, you know. So I had a little pre-programming in terms of being able to look at things and break them down. So I've known that they were going to destroy this country from within a long time ago. But did I freak out? No, I lived my life. I made money. I raised my family. And I tried to educate people on what I understood then. And now we're at a critical mass. That's the thing. We're at a critical mass. And you don't think it can happen here, can't happen here, then you're kidding yourself because it's getting ugly. You got a wide open border. What the hell's coming across that border? Got some jihad coming across that border there, folks? You know? God. Wake up. Back to you.
Yeah, wake the hell up. Look, what Chris said is really important, okay? You know, I'm not here to tell you what to do. That's not my job. You're you, man. I don't want you telling me what to do, all right? I'm just telling you to think. We're telling you to think. We're telling you to stop believing the lies. And we're telling you to learn to get along. I mean, the rift that I'm seeing on the right is between conventional republicards who follow the rhinos, quote, conservative Tea Party who follow the rhinos, and libertarians who follow Gary Johnson, and so-called Christian religious right who allegedly follow Jesus Christ, if you can't all learn to get along on where you have commonality, you are all screwed. Every single one of you, it'll be a leftist, liberal, progressive paradise, which let's be clear what that means. It means the end of civilization. These people cannot sustain their ideas. This is all theoretical nonsense that is based on bad anthropology, bad principles, and a bunch of bullshit mixed with some pseudo-intellectual words and academic credentials. It's garbage. Liberal democracies do not survive. They never have. They never will. It doesn't work that way with human beings. And what happens? They team up with the jihadis, because they think that that's going to get the Tea Party, the Republicans, the Libertarians, and the Christians. Let me clue you in a little something. They're the same as the jihadis in their bureaucratic, technocratic outlook for structuring a society. And as violent as they are, Muslim jihadis are more violent. And Muslim jihadis have something these idiots don't have, a religious conviction that gives them a moral cover to what they're doing. So a liberal democracy is an absolute capitulation. It's going to collapse under its own weight, but it's a capitulation to a Muslim takeover. We are the only ones who can save Western civilization. Is that arrogant, Rex? Yeah, maybe it's arrogant, but it's the truth. So if you all don't learn to get along, if you remain divided, I'm not going to blame the leftist progressives or the Muslims for the collapse of Western civilization. I'm going to blame you, especially Christians. We built Western civilization, and you're pissing it away. And you're doing it because you pick up your Bible and you read it out of context, and then you think that that's somehow going to be effectuated through the Republican Party. Let me clue you in on something. Jesus was not a Republican. So, you know, understand that these are overlapping spheres. See, politics is not the highest order of business for a Christian. All right? Your highest order is witnessing to Jesus Christ. Now, as we order our lives together in a plural society where we have different factions of Christians and people who aren't Christians, our politics must be informed by our Christian conscience. But you do not get to impose your Christianity on everybody else. It doesn't work that way. Jesus didn't impose Christianity. He taught himself, and he proposed it, and people followed him, and some people left him. Now, the fact that they might be doomed for all eternity, it's their choice. He didn't force anybody to do anything, and you can't do it either. And you libertarians who don't have a religious bone in your body, you better learn to get along with the Christians. The very simple fact is you're all essentially on one side of the equation. Now, there are libertine and communists and ANCAPs and all kinds of stuff. I'm talking about run-of-the-mill, conservative, libertarian-ish people, all right? You all have to learn to get along. If you don't form a united front, we're going to lose everything. And that doesn't mean just turn out to vote for Republicans so that they can take the Senate and, you know, blow smoke up your ass for the next 2 years and blame everything on Obama as the world falls apart. What it means is work together in the places that – you're not muted – in the places that matter, in the places that matter. And that is not simply elections. You've got to fix a culture. You got to educate people on what it means to be an American. You have to educate people on what it means to be responsible. You have to teach people how to live in a global world as Americans without compromising who we are, but not interfering in everybody else's business where it doesn't have any interest for us. And voting is part of it. And by voting, I don't mean just turning out on primaries, which you didn't do, by the way. You really dropped the ball in these primaries, other than saving Amash and Hulskamp and Walter Jones. Maybe Ben Sasse and unseating Cantor. You did dick. You got rolled over by the establishment of the rhinos. And I think that's pathetic, as Chris and I have been talking about this for two friggin' years. We started talking about it as soon as I drove out of Tampa in 2012. And you didn't listen, and you didn't go out there and tell people. You were running your mouths about Obama this and Obama that and Obama this. Screw Obama. Obama sucks. We know that. You don't have to keep reminding us that. You have to talk about that all day long. Focus up on fixing your house. Because if you don't fix your side of the equation, Hillary or Warren or whoever else they run is going to screw it up even further than Obama. Okay? So, you know, give me a break. And what you need to do, what you need to do is realize that you have to fix electing people. You have to fix elections. You have to fix votes. You have to fix ballots. You have to fix how it's counted. You have to repair, you know, the grip of the precinct control that they have and the gerrymandering of the two parties. You got to fix that. So before you run around dreaming that Gary Johnson is going to be your next savior, which is a psychotic pipe dream, it's not going to happen, or that you're going to somehow run any kind of alternate candidate outside of state and local level. I'm talking about the national level. It's not going to happen until you break the duopoly. Work together on changing those rules. Work together on getting those constitutional independents in seats at the local and state level and tear this thing apart so that there won't be a duopoly anymore. In the meantime, you have a third party, okay? You have a third party. It's the right wing of the duopoly. It has people like Justin Amash and Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and Trey Gowdy. Oh, well, I don't agree with Gowdy on this, and I don't agree with Mike Lee on that, and Ted Cruz did this, and of course Rand Paul sounds like he's a neocon now. Give me a break. What are you comparing them to? Are you comparing them to your ideal candidate? You don't have one. Are you comparing them to candidates that have been long dead? They're gone. You're comparing them to what you have. And if you think you got a better idea, quit bitching about Rand Paul and get up and run for office yourself. Otherwise, support the guys who are supporting the Constitution, fight the guys who aren't, and I don't care what side they're on, and fix the rules at the local level. I'd like to get out of here, so I'm going to play this five-minute clip here. It's got a little bit of Justin Amash in it. It talks a little bit about elections, and then Kristen, I'll come back and comment on the other side.
No way you can run. We've only just begun. Don't look down. It will take you down. There's no way you can hide. We'll eat you up alive. Take it slow.
And I'm glad we can hand you one more loss before you fade into total obscurity and irrelevance. To Brian Ellis, you owe my family and this community an apology for your disgusting, despicable smear campaign. You have the audacity to try to call me today after running a campaign that was called the nastiest in the country. I ran for office to stop people like you.
Thank you.
To stop people. To stop people who were more interested in themselves than in doing what's best for their district. Everyday Americans are taking back their government from the crooks and the cronies. They're taking back their government from the political class elites, the people who were so blinded by their arrogance that they thought they were going to run this smear campaign and be successful. They're taking it back from the insiders who have contempt for the American people. And I'm proud to stand up for the American people. Go back to Washington, and I'm going to continue to fight for liberty, the Constitution, and for you.
The chairman of the board at fairvote.org.
Insiders, partisan hacks, they use sophisticated demographic cartography technology, and they basically carve out these districts, and they're these crazy gerrymanders. It's like a drunk man with a Etch-a-Sketch, you know? It just looks terrible, okay? And so we're saying that if you pay taxes, and if you're subject to the laws and rules of the land, that merits representation. So everybody can have representation.
Drew Spencer, staff attorney with fairvote.org.
Currently, we're using this winner-take-all regime. Most legislative bodies are elected from single-seat districts. So there'll be a little geographic area, and you vote there. And if you're not in the plurality of people that happens to elect a candidate, then you're just out of luck. You basically are going to have no representation.
Now, an alternative to this current system is something called proportional representation, or fair voting. Rather than 18 gerrymandered districts in Pennsylvania, each choosing one representative, you could have five districts, with each electing between three and five representatives. This way, it won't be winner-take-all, but instead, candidates will be elected based on the proportion of the votes they receive.
Under a proportional representation system, instead of focusing so much on the geographical district, we're going to expand the area that's covered and allow people to, in a sense, district themselves with their votes. So if you have a three-seat district, for example, every third of the population will get a representative based on how they voted.
No longer having to win the majority of the vote, these reforms could make it a lot easier for third parties to grab congressional seats. They can also limit the influence of money in our elections.
You generally have to outspend your opponent, so there's this race to the top. Under a fair representation voting system, instead, you're going to be electing three, four, or five candidates from an area, so you don't have to spend the most in the race.
But that might also be why there's so much opposition to election reform, from the two major parties as well as the special interests that are flush with cash. Still, the election reformers are pressing on.
The Constitution does not specify how states have to elect their congressional representatives, and in fact, for the first 50 years of the country, we saw states electing their congressional representatives by a variety of creative methods. So all Congress would have to do is, right now they actually require every state to elect by single-seat districts. They don't have to do that, though. By changing that statute alone, it would open the door to states being able to experiment again.
You choose who represents you, not some insider committee drawing these gerrymander maps. And that's a powerful message.
We're reaching for the sky.
You know, that was an important clip. I don't know if people really understand what is going on in terms of the process of, you know, picking politicians, getting on the ballots, you know, all that stuff. You and I covered that, well, it goes back before me even, but, you know, we did show after show after show after show. You know, we did shows, we had a lot of third party or alternate party people. You know, had these discussions forever. Our political system's broken. There's no doubt about it. And I, for one, and you, we both said this many, many, many times, I want competition. The problem is that the GOP and the DNC have all the power, and they've changed laws at state levels to make it as difficult as possible for alternate parties to get on the ballot, and then when they get on the ballot, then they sue them and try to discount, you know, their collection, their signature collections. I mean, it just never ends. It's just, it's corrupt as hell, and we've covered this stuff extensively, so you could go back, and including the Robert show, you know, you could go back to, you know, all those conversations and catch up. It's a mess, and it's terrible, it's crooked, it's evil, it's obsolete, and it sucks, because then you're stuck with going, okay, I got two people to vote for, I got a D or an R. Now, that's not always the case, because the alternate parties have gotten candidates in different areas, and there's more and more and more rise of those candidates at state levels, and it's awesome, you know, and we've actually had a couple of independents here and there actually make it into the Congress, so you know, it's an important thing, and it's got to change, but it's going to take time, it's going to take work, it's going to take organization, it's going to take people getting state laws changed, and everything is against them every day to make the, and I applaud the people who are in these alternate parties who are fighting hard to make those changes. We need competition. Right now, you and I have focused on the midterms, and I hate saying this because I'm just disgusted with the Republican Party, but we've been focusing on getting as many constitutional conservatives into and replacing some of these rhinos, you know, for this election. That is not our only goal in what we've done on these shows, and far from it. I bet you we did 100 shows on alternate parties through a period of time between all the different people that were doing shows together that we were on. right now, you know, when it comes down to it, I actually had an alternate party in my local election I voted for here because I'm not a staunch R. I'm not a Republican. I can't stand them. I can't stand most of them. But there are some good ones. And parties are not evil. People are evil. Okay, a party does not have an evil content. Money is not evil. Intent is evil. It's just amazing how people will, you know, pick a scripture and misread it, and next thing you know, they're, like, totally confused. And then they pass it around. That's the scary part. But, you know, it's that whole conversation. When 2014 is over, we're going to have what we have. And we've been working on 2016. I haven't, because I didn't even post a thread in the group on it until, I don't know, a couple months ago, just because, you know, it was just coming out, you know, and they kept picking on Rand because he was a front runner, so they were trying to focus him, everybody on him, and then Cruz comes in, and then, you know, then you got these people talking about the doctor, and, you know, it's like, what, you know, what the hell is his qualifications? I mean, he's a great doctor. Maybe he ought to be Surgeon General. The heck, you know, you're looking for a savior here? You know, it's just, so already the conversation is on 2016. But there's something else happens in 2016. It's a small chance to redeem yourself because all of the House is up for re-election again. So you got another chance to get rid of these bastards that are ruining our country, okay? And then there will be a third of the Senate up for re-election, so you have a chance to get rid of some of those jerks and get some people. One thing I did notice in the 2014 midterms was that there were some good guys and gals running against the establishment Republicans. And I applaud them because some of them were, they didn't win, some of them, most of them, but they got really close, which shows they're right on the edge of a breakthrough. Now, would I have liked to have seen it differently? Yeah, there was about half a dozen guys I would really have liked to have seen defeated, and unfortunately they weren't, and it sucks, and I'm pissed because I'm not pissed at the rhinos. I'm pissed at the people who didn't do their freaking job and get these other people elected, you know, within 2 or 3, 4%. Are you kidding me? You know, in a local or a state race, that could be 1,000 people. It could be a few hundred people to make the difference. So people didn't work. They didn't want it bad enough. I don't know what it's going to take on that one. That's one that always perplexes me. I mean, does the dollar have to crash? Do we have to get in war with Russia before people wake up, before they realize that there's some really sick, insane people running our country, and you need to replace them? I don't know what it's going to take. You know, the next crash? It's coming, baby. So this is a really important topic. It's hard for me to talk about because I'm frustrated. And we've been talking about it for 2 years. I mean, you and I started talking about this at the convention. We started prepping for 2014. And obviously we don't have a big enough audience or enough influence or people will listen. I don't know, you know, but we tried. That's all I can say. We tried to get Priebus replaced.
Fired.
We tried to get Bonehead replaced, you know, as the leadership.
Yep.
You know what? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, yeah, we did that twice and we tried to do that. But, yeah, no, you're right. Look,
get,
I don't know how,
yeah.
how big our – I have no delusions that we have some kind of, you know, Mark Levin size or Rush Limbaugh size audience. We don't. So
well, if we talked about the
amateur
news of the day, maybe we could get there.
Yeah, well, I'm really not interested in that. Look, the principal reason we do this is because no one else is really doing it. And
that's sad.
It beats yelling at the television. And frankly, unless you, Mr. and Mrs. America out there in grassroots radio land, get the show out there, you know, Chris and I are pretty much just talking to ourselves and, you know, a couple of hundred people a week and then I don't know how many more in archives. Most people listen to the show after it airs. But unless you're sharing these ideas, unless you're getting information out there, unless you're getting the show out there, remember all the shows are available on blogtalkradio.com/LibertyThunder all the way back from the convention. But, you know, are we going to change the universe? No. Are we going to change the world? No. Are we going to do our part? You're damn right we are.
and when it falls apart, I will say I told you so. But the simple fact is I want a clean conscience. I don't want to have to stand the judgment and say, yeah, you know, I saw it. I saw the usury. I saw the killing. I saw the Christian persecutions. I saw the end of liberty. I saw the murder. I saw it all. And I thought, as long as, you know, I got food in my fridge and something on television and I got gas in my car, what do I care? That's where a lot of people are. You better get your heads out of your asses. Of course, if you're listening to the show, that's not you, which means that you have to help the other people get their heads out of their asses. We're going to try to go to final thoughts real quick, but I just wanted to say I don't know if all those proposals that they had about changing the rules for elections are the right answers. I don't pretend to know. I do know this. We've got 50 states, a couple of territories, a district, and goodness how many counties and precincts in each one. Try something different. Get something going in your locality where you have a bigger voice. Show up. Go to the meetings. Get the rules changed. Reach out to your legislators who are actually interested in liberty and the Constitution and change these rules. And the idea is that we got to try different things because right now what you have is a controlled system that quarters no dissent. Reagan was a fluke. 94 with Gingrich was a fluke. This is not how it's supposed to work, and they don't like it. And did you even pay attention to the RNC summer meeting this week? Did you even know what was going on? I announced it last week, but I don't know how many of you paid attention. We've got a few dedicated liberty warriors going to the conventions and at least exposing what the Republicans are doing. Are they getting anything changed? No, because half those delegates are consultants that want the system perpetuated. Little Prince Pubic, you know, runs his mouth about, we want libertarians and Tea Party, and we're all going to work together for Jeb Bush. Screw you, you little pissant. You know, that's what's happening, and no one pays attention to it. You're all hopped up for the primaries, and you're already, you know, getting in a rage over running Rand Paul or Ted Cruz or not Rand Paul and not Ted Cruz or Tan Paul versus Red Cruz or blah, 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 blah. The rules, as they're written now, with the debates, with the delegates, pretty much ensure that they're going to pick their next dickhead unless there is such a tsunami and groundswell behind a Rand Paul or a Ted Cruz that they don't have a choice. That's what happened with Ronald Reagan. They never wanted Reagan. They hated Ronald Reagan. They packed Ronald Reagan's administrations with George H.W. Bush and a bunch of other assholes that pretty much undid everything Reagan tried to do within 8 months of the administration. By the end of 1981, it was pretty much over. You know, some things got through, but for the most part, they were already gearing up for the next, you know, mess. And then a new world order is coming into view, 1,000 points of light, wouldn't it be prudent? This is what's happening. You got to change the rules. Instead of, you know, yelling at libertarians for being libertarian or yelling at Republicans because they won't vote libertarian or Constitution Party or Conservative Party, work together on the rules. And look what happened. They came after Justin Amash. They hate Justin Amash. This prick Ellis called Justin Amash, Rove calls him the most liberal vote in the House, which is a bunch of crap. And this little prick actually called him Al-Qaeda's best friend in the House because he doesn't want the NSA spying on you, because he doesn't want to finance ISIS and Al-Qaeda. He's Al-Qaeda's best friend. That's disgusting, especially given the fact that Justin Amash's heritage goes back to Syria. So screw Ellis, and people are like, well, he was a sore winner. He went after him. What that guy put Justin's family through, you know, Justin has a young guy and he has a young family, and he's up there fighting for you. And not only is he fighting for you, he tells you every time he votes how he did it and why. And he doesn't just tell the people in Michigan in his district. He tells all of us. This is the kind of person you want in Congress. And they went after him, and he obliterated the opposition. He went right to the people, and the people in Michigan got up, and they put him back in office. Same with Walter Jones, Tim Holtzkamp, and Kansas, I think. And then you lost, of course. Carr lost because you split the vote against Lamar Alexander in Tennessee. You split the vote six ways. In a primary, the guy won with less than 50% by 9 points. I guarantee you they cheated on some of that. Right in the car. Get rid of Lamar Alexander.
Oh, but we got to take the House for the Republicans.
Really? Because you think Mitch McConnell is going to suddenly become a conservative? Come on. Wake up. You've got to change the rules. You've got to get involved. And it's not fun, and it sucks, and it's uncomfortable, and it's confusing, and you're going to need some help, and you're going to have to work together. But no one said liberty was easy. It's much easier being a slave. You go where they tell you to go. You do what they tell you to do. You don't have to think too much. That's the kind of life you want. You're going to get it soon. I don't want that kind of life, and I live here. So get off your ass and do something about it. Anyway, Chris, let's go to final thoughts.
I love your profound ending on that tirade. I think, I mean, we've had a lot of conversations about the elections and the systems and the things that need to be done, but you did make a comment, and I did notice in my news feed, and somebody posted it, was that some of these campaigns are pushing for a write-in. And then, of course, the Republican establishment is going to tell you, oh, no, you can't do that. You're going to end up losing to do the Democrat, blah, blah, blah. Well, what happened in Alaska? That's how what's-her-name up there won. You know, she lost, and then they did a write-in campaign, and she beat the guy who beat her. And now she's sitting in the Senate. So it works. You know, and so the thing is, they're going to try to scare you. That's another reason. Yeah, and that thing about Tennessee running six people, that is a classic example of exactly what you and I talk about and you really talk about on this show, and that is quit fighting amongst yourselves over these petty issues. Our country's burning down. Focus on the bigger picture. And that's the same thing. You run six people, you split the vote six ways, and the bad guy wins. I mean, how stupid is that? You know, I don't know the whole situation in Tennessee, but I don't know why people can't get together going, what is the goal? The goal is to get rid of the rhino a-hole neocon. I don't know if he's a neocon, but I'd have to look it up. Wouldn't take long to figure it out. Just look at his votes. But is to get rid of him. Okay, how do we, all six of us who have a desire to run, how do we make sure we do that? And one would be saying, well, whoever's, you know, pulling the biggest lead, then the other five people, you know, give up their egos for to save the country and say, let's work together and let's make sure we win and get rid of this guy. That's how you do that. But for some reason, you know, when you're dealing with liberty movement, libertarian, constitutional republic, you know, I mean, they just, I don't know, man. If there's an insanity, an individualism, that's detrimental to winning. That's why the libs always win, because they have a hive mentality. You know, they're socialists, and they're controlled, you know, and so it's they'll go out and they'll drop their issues to win, and then they win, and then they can work on their issues. I don't know why that's difficult for Republicans not to figure out, but they seem to excel at failing. And this is going to be an issue in 2016. It's going to be an issue in the presidency in the primary. And it's going to be an issue because we got all the House and a third of the Senate, you know, getting replaced in 2016. And we're going to go through this again and again and again on the road to failure. And question is are people going to learn how to work together to win? You know, and then people, you hear this cry, I got to fight for my principle. Well, how's that principle working now when we can't win? You know, yeah, you can sit at home and going, yeah, we lost, but I stood by my principle. I mean, you go around and around and around and around in circles. I mean, we've had conversations about this forever. You know, you've got to win. And part of winning is defeating the enemy. And I don't think people understand that. And I remember one of the races that the guy barely lost, and he was in an interview, and he said, wow, I just couldn't believe I'm a senator in my state, and I can't believe that these people would do these dirty tactics to me. And I'm thinking, what are you, naive? Where were you in 2012? Didn't you see what was going on in our country in the primary? You know, the problem that I believe, okay, that
good Christian conservative Americans have is they view the rest of the world through their eyes or their perception, thinking that the world's like them. The world ain't like you. There's a lot of bad people in this world. There's a lot of greedy people. There's a lot of evil people in this world. There's a lot of conniving, nasty, backstabbing a-holes, and a lot of them are right in the Republican Party. You need to wake up. I mean, it's one thing, you know, with my background in martial arts is you have to know your opponent, and you have to assume you have to, it's like a bear. I used to say this all the time because I spent half my life in Alaska, and I did a lot of wilderness stuff. And I used to say the bear is the most predictable creature in the woods. And people go, why? I said, because he's the most unpredictable. And people would look at me like, wow, it's deep. No, you know why? Because you didn't know. They may, I mean, I ran into bears that would look at you and grunt and ignore you. I fished in streams next to bears that were fishing, and they didn't give a shit. And I've also woke up in the mountains, you know, climbing in the mountains with a bear sniffing my face. You know, but I always slept with my gun right on my leg. And, but again, that would have been a, you know, would have been a quick draw and would have been risky. But I've also come around a corner and startled a bear and had him run. And I've also come around a corner and startled a bear and had him charge me and had to kill him. You know, in other words, you never know. And that's the problem. And so what you do is you prepare yourself for the unknown. And what you're dealing with is a creature that is totally unknown. People were so surprised that a couple of these races, they went out and they got Democrat, they lied and put these chump ads out there and got Democrats to vote against the Tea Party guy because they were going to lose, you know, he was going to take away their welfare and all this crap. And they're like surprised. And I'm going, why are you surprised? How many years do you have to be alive in the current world of the United States of America to realize that there's some sick stuff going on and there's some really sick, evil people in politics? That's another one. It's politics. So you prepare yourself to win, which means you have to prepare yourself to be attacked and you have to prepare yourself to defeat your enemy. If you don't start fighting and quit being a nice conservative Christian, you know, but I'm a nice guy. They shouldn't have done that. Well, then you better get out of politics because you're going to lose. This is my close for tonight. And this is true in all things in life. If you're surprised and you're an adult in America with all the shit that's going on in this country, I used to use this analogy in training martial arts. If you walk down the street by a bar that's known as a dangerous bar, and somebody comes out of the bar and kicks your butt, okay, you could say, well, that was his fault because I was just kind of like minding my own business walking down the street and I didn't know. But if you walk down the same street and the same guy walks out of the bar and kicks your ass again, it's your fault. You can get all mad at the guy all you want. So the question is are you prepared to live in this insane world that we live in today? This is no longer Mayberry RFD America. Wake up. You're in a war. You know, we are past that era. You know, I see this in my neighborhood. Parents, you know, taking their kids to the bus stop but staying in their car until that bus picks those kids up. When I was growing up, never would have thought of that. Why do they do that? Because we've got a lot of sick bastards living in our communities now. You know, you have to be prepared. And it goes for politics. November, I think there's going to be some write-in campaigns. And I don't know all the details of them. I'm sure we'll talk about them as time goes on. But I'll tell you something, man. Change is coming, and it don't look really good. And so the question is, and I've said this before, and I'll say it in my closing statement, who we have in our government, the quality of character, the how they view the Constitution, the rule of law, sound money, and sound, sane foreign policy will predict what our country is going to look like after the next correction. That's my close.
Yeah, correction. I don't know that there is a correction. There is definitely a crash. But no, I think you're absolutely right. Being prepared means knowing what's in the, there are some things that are inevitable. You just know that. The dollar cannot live now. How long can they play with it and float it and keep it going? Anybody's this, you know, they got a lot of tools and availability and, of course, guns. But BRICS is an unknown quantity, unless it happens to be a Hegelian dialectic and they're just pushing us between the two, which is a possibility. You know, who knows? But the simple fact is, what you do know is what you can control. What they know is how to control you. But you see, the thing about free will, which you all have, is that it can't be controlled unless you are willing to be controlled. You have to be willing to eat their message. You have to be willing to buy their lies. You have to be willing to listen to O'Reilly and Hannity and Megyn Kelly and Greta every night and Brett Baer's Neocon Hour and tell you what to think. You have to be willing to say, I'm not going to watch that RT stuff. That's Russian state television. It's propaganda. I don't want to listen to Press TV. That's from Tehran. That's Iranian propaganda. Yeah, they are. What do you think Fox News is? What do you think MSLSD is? What do you think CNN is? It's all propaganda. But they're coming at it from different angles. So you could probably find that common truth. And then, you know, there is this tool called the Internet. There's a lot of bullshit on it. But there's some really good, solid investigative journalism still going on. Some of the stuff I've been looking at and getting from Vice TV on YouTube, phenomenal. Jeff Green at Alternative Media Television does some really good work. Even Alex Jones sometimes does good work. You got to pick your sources, and you got to cross-reference your information. That's what Chris does in his group all day long. Liberties Talk on Facebook. Go there. Get involved. Talk. Learn. Ask questions. Follow up on what you heard here. Stop assuming that what you believed yesterday has to be true today. You were probably lied to yesterday, you bought it for some reason, and now you're sticking to it because you don't want to admit you were wrong. Fatal mistakes happen when you cannot admit that you are wrong. You've been wrong, you've been lied to, and you believed it. Do not continue to go down that path. One of the basic things that they teach you in boot camp, all right, is how to march. And one of the basic things in marching is about face. If you're heading in the wrong direction, turn the frack around. So if you bought the neocon lies, if you bought the Israel's the 51st state of the United States lies, if you bought the, you know, Muslims are just nice, fuzzy, cuddly teddy bears who don't want to chop your head off lies, whatever the lies you bought, figure out what the truth is, what the reality is. Learn it and know what you stand for. If you truly want liberty, you truly want to be free, put on your big boy and big girl panties and sack up and get to work, because liberty doesn't come at no cost. And I'm not just simply talking about going over to kill some other guy because they said something and I support my troops and we'll kill everybody because then we can be free. That doesn't work that way. The more killing you do overseas, the less free you are at home, because tyranny expands overseas, it grows the government over here, it puts you in fear, and you're willing to give up more of your stuff, and you get a police state, no freedom. I'm not saying foreign wars are necessarily bad. We will probably always be, to some degree or another, involved in wars. You know, that's not of this whole isolationist idea is just crap, it's not going to happen. But non-interventionism means we're very tempered before we go to war. We only go when it's necessary, and when we go decisively, and we get the job done quickly. For victory, period. Can't do that when you got unending streams of money and you got a parasitic, sycophantic bunch of psychopaths who have basically taken over your foreign policy and your economy. It's that pressure from above, pressure from below crap. They're feeding it to you. It's a Hegelian dialectic. They're poking you, and poking you, trying to get you to react. You think this border crisis happened all of a sudden by magic? You think the whole Ebola stuff plastered all over the news is you know, coincidence? These are things that they are using to get you to move in a certain direction because they cannot get 7 billion people on the planet to cooperate with 300 men as their rulers unless those people choose it. You have to choose tyranny. You have to choose your slavery. And they're managing your mind to get you to do that. You're being manipulated into being divided against each other and against other people overseas so that you can't see the enemy in front of your face. They love that the right wing hates Obama because you're so focused on the Marxist community organizer in Martha's Vineyard that you're not paying attention to the bastards on your own side who've screwed you worse than he has. And you dumb leftists who don't listen to the show, but just in general. Neocons, wars, Bush lied, people died, and then you elect Obama, and he does the same thing, only more, and suddenly, well, but he's our guy. That's the stupidity. That's how they keep ratcheting the tyranny, by getting you to think that somehow if you go to the other side, the other party, the false left-right paradigm, the D's, the R's, my team, your team, that things are changing. They're giving you hope that there's change. There is no change unless you change the game. There is no change unless you stop living in fear. You have to do it. And you can't do it by yourself, and I can't do it by myself, and Chris can't do it by us. We all have to do it together. Learn to get along with people who you do not agree with about everything. Agree about the broad issues. Stop fighting about nonsensical stuff. That is the only way that it can happen. All right, real quick, I'm just going to announce it because the primary is still going on, so you got to give it a shot. You know, so far it's been a mixed bag, mostly nothing. All right, but there's a couple coming up. Try to make them count. August 12th, you got Connecticut, Minnesota, Wisconsin. August 19th, Alaska. Help Joe Miller out, for God's sake. Help him out. And Wyoming. And then the 26th, you've got Arizona, Florida, Vermont. Try to get some victories in there. We've had some victories at the local level. You got to make it count. You have to do it, you know. And it's hard, and you're going to upset some people. You might lose some friends. You might get into some uncomfortable situations. You might make some mistakes, and guess what? The only fatal mistakes are the ones you won't admit you made and the ones you won't try to learn from and correct. So if you were all for the neocon wars before because you think it's us versus them, realize that the them that we are fighting is the them that we have created. They create the enemy. They get you scared of the enemy. You ignore the real enemy, and then you end up fighting the enemy that they created. It costs money. It costs lives. And it costs you your liberty here at home. That's the name of the game. All right? John F. Kennedy, who knew a couple of things about fighting, said, and by the way, today John F. Kennedy would not be a Democrat. He might be a tad too conservative to be a Republican. But listen to him. There are risks and costs to action, but they are far less than the long-range risks of comfortable inaction. Think about that. It's much more comfortable to do nothing. But if you do nothing, you're already a slave. Get off your butt and make it happen. The interesting thing is that we're going to do a couple more of these shows, Fatal Mistakes, because the mistakes are huge, and unless we learn from them, we're not going to do anything to correct them. Unless we work together, we're not going to change it. You have to share this show. You have to get the word out there. You have to learn how to think and quit accepting things that you learned in the past as de facto facts, as set facts, as solid facts. Verify them. You've been lied to. If you're watching Fox News, you're fed crap. If you're watching CNN, you've been fed crap. If you're reading Foreign Affairs, it's crap. If you're reading the Washington Post, it's crap. You listen to Rush Limbaugh and Mark Levin. When I say it's crap, it's crap. They all use the technique of giving you 60-70% truth, a bunch of buzzwords that they know get your emotions all riled up, and then they smuggle in their lies, and you eat it up every time. Get your head out of your ass. Stop falling for the lies. Stand up as an individual. Stand up shoulder to shoulder with other liberty lovers, and stand with those liberty lovers who are willing to go on the hill and do the work. It is totally up to you. And I know Chris and I touch on this because guess what? We're both Christians. That's just, you know, that's what it is. Most Americans say they're Christians. Some of you are hostile towards Christianity. Get your head out of your ass. Western liberty is based on Christian principles that didn't exist before. I'm not here to talk to you about your personal salvation, your relationship with God. You got to figure that out on your own. But let me just tell you something. If you say you're a Christian, start acting like one. And if you say you're not a Christian, realize that the principles of liberty that you live that you champion come from a Christian understanding. Learn the whole picture. But today's reading was at Mass was actually, interestingly enough, about fear, which I thought was kind of interesting given the fact that we are have, you know, talking about this topic. But it was about, you know, where Jesus approached after his resurrection. He was walking on water, and Peter said, "Lord, is that you?" Because they first thought it was a ghost. And he said, "If it's you, Lord, bid that I come to you." So St. Peter got out of the boat and started walking towards Jesus on the water. Now, this is not, you know, in Christian understanding, Jesus is God. Peter is just a guy, a fisherman from Galilee, probably not very well educated, although he could probably read and write, keep books for his business. But he was certainly not, a pharisaical genius or a scribe. He walked on the water towards Jesus, and then the wind blew and there were waves. And he looked down like the, you know, Wile E. Coyote, and was like, "Oh, crap, I'm walking on water," and fell in. And Jesus picked him up and said, "Oh, ye of little faith." But before that, when they approached, they were all scared. He said, "Fear not, it is I." Fear not. Little faith. That has a double dimension. There is a religious aspect to it, but on the temporal plane, on the horizontal plane down here, do you have faith in liberty? Do you have faith in the old constitutional republic? Do you have faith in yourself, that you are endowed by your Creator with dignity, that you are made to be free, and that that's something worth fighting for? And if it is, fear not doesn't mean that you don't have fear. Fear not means have courage. Sack up if you're afraid, if you're stuttering, if you're embarrassed, if you're worried about being on some kind of a list. Get over it. The cost of giving in to fear is far greater than the danger of being brave. Get off your butt. Work hard. Yes, August, everything's quiet and lazy in America. Well, if you're lazy and quiet, they'll get you. They haven't stopped working. They haven't stopped blowing people up. They haven't stopped printing money. Make it happen. Together. Quit fighting amongst yourselves. We'll be back next Sunday. In the meantime, make it count for liberty. This is Rex and Trog signing off.
The thunder of liberty rumbles on.
You win!
Welfare state have told us they have a utopian solution, a peace without victory. They call their policy accommodation. And they say if we'll only avoid any direct confrontation with the enemy, he'll forget his evil ways and learn to love us. All who oppose them are indicted as warmongers. They say we offer simple answers to complex problems. Well, perhaps there is a simple answer. Not an easy answer, but simple. If you and I have the courage to tell our elected officials that we want our national policy based on what we know in our hearts is morally right. We cannot buy our security, our freedom from the threat of the bomb, by committing an immorality so great as saying to a billion human beings now enslaved behind the Iron Curtain, give up your dreams of freedom, because to save our own skins, we're willing to make a deal with your slave masters. Alexander Hamilton said, a nation which can prefer disgrace to danger is prepared for a master. And deserves one. Now let's set the record straight. There's no argument over the choice between peace and war, but there's only one guaranteed way you can have peace, and you can have it in the next second. Surrender. Admittedly, there's a risk in any course we follow other than this, but every lesson of history tells us that the greater risk lies in appeasement, and this is the specter our well-meaning liberal friends refuse to face, that their policy of accommodation is appeasement. And it gives no choice between peace and war, only between fight or surrender. If we continue to accommodate, continue to back and retreat, eventually we have to face the final demand, the ultimatum. And what then? Well, Nikita Khrushchev has told his people he knows what our answer will be. He has told them that we're retreating under the pressure of the Cold War, and someday, when the time comes to deliver the final ultimatum, our surrender will be voluntary, because by that time, we will have been weakened from within spiritually, morally, and economically. He believes this because from our side he's heard voices pleading for peace at any price, or better rev than dead, or as one commentator put it, he'd rather live on his knees than die on his feet. And therein lies the road to war, because those voices don't speak for the rest of us. You and I know, and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard round the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance. And this is the meaning in the phrase of Barry Goldwater, peace through strength. Winston Churchill said, the destiny of man is not measured by material computations. When great forces are on the move in the world, we learn we're spirits, not animals. And he said, there's something going on in time and space and beyond time and space, which, whether we like it or not, spells duty. You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness. We will keep in mind and remember that Barry Goldwater has faith in us. He has faith that you and I have the ability and the dignity and the right to make our own decisions and determine our own destiny. Thank you very much.
Trust the Republicans. Let me be clear, I don't trust the Republicans. And I don't trust the Democrats. And I think a whole lot of Americans likewise don't trust the Republicans and the Democrats, because it is leadership in both parties that has gotten us in this mess.
The establishment will grow more and more hysterical the more powerful Rand Paul and Ted Cruz become, and they will gain strength as it's obvious that they're among the few people willing to raise the right question. And I consistently have been on the side of having the courage that Rand Paul and Ted Cruz have. And I think it's sad to watch the establishment.
There are a lot of D.C. consultants that say there's a choice for Republicans to make. We can either choose to keep our head down, to not rock the boat, to not stand for anything, or we can stand for principle. And they say if you stand for principle, you lose elections. The way to do it, the smart way, the Washington way, is don't stand against Obamacare, don't stand against the debt ceiling, don't stand against nothing. I want to tell you something. That is a false dichotomy. You want to lose elections? Stand for nothing. Look at the last four congressional elections, 06, 08, 10, and 12. Three of the four, we followed that strategy. 06, 08, and 12, we put our head down, we stood for nothing, and we got walloped. The one election that was a tremendous election was 2010, when Republicans drew a line in the sand. We said we stand unequivocally against Obamacare, against bankrupting the country, and we won an historic tidal wave of an election. And then, of course, all of us remember President Dole and President McCain and President Romney. Now look, those are good men, they're decent men, but when you don't stand and draw a clear distinction, when you don't stand for principle, Democrats celebrate.
Well look, I'm a big fan of Rand Paul's. He and I have fought side by side on fight after fight after fight in the U.S. Senate, and I anticipate we'll continue to fight side by side. He's a terrific voice for liberty.
Imagine a time when the White House is once again occupied by a friend of liberty. And you may think I'm talking about electing Republicans. I'm not. I'm talking about electing lovers of liberty. It isn't good enough to pick the lesser of two evils. We must elect men We must elect men and women of principle and conviction and action who will lead us back to greatness. There is a great and tumultuous battle underway for the future, not of the Republican Party, but the future of the entire country.